Community College Committee is now being called to order. Is everybody here? Okay. Amanda, I know you're out there somewhere. Would you please take roll?
Chair Del Carlo?
I'm here.
Vice Chair Lieberman? Regent Carvalho?
Here.
Regent Geddes?
Here.
Regent McAdoo?
Here.
Regent McMichael?
Here.
And our advisory members, Dr. Nancy Brune, Mr. Rob Hooper.
Here.
Nancy McCormick.
Nancy McCormick.
And Nancy McCormick.
Did you say Nancy McCormick? Okay.
Yes.
Great. I would say we have a quorum. Okay. Thank you. Before we get started, I would like to do a moment of silence. We recently, since our last meeting, we lost Clifton Macklin. He was the brand new chair of TMCC's IAC, and he was so full of enthusiasm and ideas, and it's a huge loss. So let's just remember Clifton, please. Thank you very much. This is our first meeting of the year, and we haven't met since last year, and I'd like to welcome two new members. We have Amy McCavallo, who joined the Board of Regents January 1st, and Donald McMichaels, Sr., and so thank you very much. And we also want to welcome Laura Perkins. She's not on this committee, but she's a brand new regent as of January 1st, and our veteran, Dr. Patrick Carter. So thank you for coming today. We'll start with public comment. Mr. Gould, would you like to read?
Sure, Madam Chair. With your indulgence, before I do that, I'd like to just make a comment to the regents who are here. By my count, there are 8 regents attending this meeting, which is wonderful. However, it does constitute a quorum of the full board. So I would ask everyone to please make sure that you stay on topic so that we are not having any potential open meeting law issues by talking about things that were not agendized with a quorum of the board present. With that, public comment will be taken during this agenda item. No action may be taken on a matter raised under this item until the matter is included on an agenda as an item on which action may be taken. Comments will be limited to 3 minutes per person. Persons making comment will be asked to begin by stating their name for the record and to spell their last name. The committee chair may elect to allow additional public comment on a specific agenda item when that agenda item is being discussed. In accordance with the Attorney General Opinion Number 00-047, as restated in the Attorney General's Open Meeting Law Manual, the chair may prohibit comment if the content of that comment is a topic that is not relevant to or within the authority of the Board of Regents, or if the content is willfully disruptive of the meeting by being irrelevant, repetitious, slanderous, offensive, inflammatory, irrational, or amounting to personal attacks or interfering with the rights of other speakers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gould. We'll go on to item number 2. Thank you. This is my first meeting. Can you tell? Okay, do we have any public comment in ELCO?
There's no public comment from ELCO.
Thank you very much. Do we have any public comment in Reno?
No public comment in Reno, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Do we have any public comment here in Las Vegas? Seeing none, now we'll go on to item number 2, to the minutes. I request approval for the minutes from the November 26, 2018 meeting.
So moved.
Thank you. Thank you, and I have a second. Do we have any discussion on the minutes or any corrections? Hearing none, all in favor of the minutes as written?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Anybody abstain? Okay, thank you very much. We'll go on to item number 3 and turn this over to our fabulous Vice Chancellor of Community Colleges, Nate McKinnon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Much appreciated. Good morning, Regents, members, and presidents, Institutional Advisory Council, chairs, and guests. We very much appreciate having you today. Madam Chair, first of all, congratulations on your appointment as chair, and we're very excited to have you as the chair of the Community College Committee.
Thank you.
And what that holds moving forward. This is our first meeting since we had changed the cycle of the meetings, as you remember, from the being on cycle with the board to being off cycle with the board. So we skipped the January meeting that would have been in place. So today's meeting is in April, and our next meeting will be in July, and then we'll be on a similar schedule moving forward. A couple things I wanted to just make comments on. The first is we have a new addition to the community college team, but the NC team that I wanted to just take a moment to introduce, and that is Danielle Donato is here. If Danielle could please stand. Danielle is our new senior learning concierge for Nevada System of Higher Education. She's working closely with the MGM partnership, and you'll be hearing more about that at the upcoming board meeting, but she's just completing her fifth day here in the system office. However, she doesn't come from very far away. She was previously at UNLV for 10 years, and also received her master's from UNLV. So has been in the Las Vegas area since 2006. So we were just so excited to have her here as a partner working on that program, and we just wanted to say welcome. Thank you very much. We also wanted to make sure that the committee is aware that our institutional advisory councils, we've added a few new members at a number of different IACs. However, we're still working on establishing chairs at two of our institutions. As you heard, the unfortunate passing of Clifton Macklin at TMCC, that institutional advisory council, thank you to Nancy for stepping in for the time being as vice chair, but is still working to identify a chair. And the same is true with Great Basin College. Will Muschietti has been ably filling in as an acting chair, if you will, while that institutional advisory council works to identify a permanent chair as well. So that means that Nancy Brune and Rob Hooper, sort of the rocks of IAC chairs, have been the chairs since, I think, the beginning of both of those institutional advisory councils and continue to serve. And we really thank both of you for your service in those roles. And then the last thing I wanted to mention is that recently the American Association of Community Colleges had its annual Congress and conference just last weekend and earlier this week. That's the biggest event for the president's associations of community colleges around the country. A lot of great things that can be taken away from those gatherings and learning about the good work of community colleges around the nation. But I wanted to take a particular moment to call out that the AACC is working diligently right now with the Trump administration on apprenticeships and the roles that they play across community colleges and the importance they have in our workforce. And so we're very pleased that in the creation of the AACC Apprenticeship Council that will help guide some of that work, we have two Nevada representatives. One is President Zaragoza from College of Southern Nevada, and the other is Frank Woodbeck, who previously was at the College of Southern, previously was at NC, now is also at the College of Southern Nevada. So very good news there for Nevada's representation on that work regarding apprenticeships and the role that they're going to play. And on a related note, we are currently searching a position that's federally funded by the Department of Labor through a partnership with Owen and Dieter for an apprenticeship navigator that would work directly with all four community colleges on further identifying opportunities with businesses for registered apprenticeship across the state. And so that's a position that we are hoping to fill soon and is posted right now. And again, it's federally funded, tied to a Department of Labor grant that puts that position in place. And so with that, Madam Chair, I think the other things that I want to talk about are coming up later on our agenda. I'm very excited about those. And that concludes my remarks.
Thank you for a very informative report, and it's exciting to hear we're going to have a navigator on the apprenticeship, because I think that is really, really key to our community colleges. So thank you. We'll go on to item number four. We're going to have a presentation by Starfish. Starfish is the software, the company's Hobson's, and so I'd like to welcome to the podium Dr. Stephanie Hill, who's the Associate Vice President of Student Engagement Services at CSN, and Kyla McIntosh, Director of Student Affairs at CSN, also Jean Russell and Shirley Gonzalez with Hobson's. So the floor is all yours. One comment from Vice Chancellor McKinnon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the committee's edification, I'm very excited about today's presentation, something we've talked about some time ago with our friends at Hobson's and Starfish. This is a product that, you know, and I don't want to steal too much of your thunder here, but two of our institutions had started working on this some time ago, and that was CSN and TMCC, and it became clear that it's a very valuable tool that could be used by all institutions. And so last summer, the presidents asked me to work with Hobson's to identify a potential partnership where all four community colleges could gain in this, and at a point that makes it a value proposition for all institutions, including our smaller institutions, where individually buying something like this is often a challenge. And so we were very fortunate we were able to work with Hobson's to make this happen. So now I'm very proud of the fact that all four community colleges either have fully implemented or are on the path to fully implementing the Starfish platform, and, you know, and very excited for you to learn about what it does, because I think this really is the types of tools that our community colleges know we need that will help with student success overall in ensuring that we can improve our retention rates. So with that, I'll turn it over to our team. Thank you.
There we go. Can everyone hear me remotely as well, hopefully? Technology. My name is Shirley Gonzalez. Thank you for the introduction, Madam Chair. I really am happy to be here. We have a team of folks, so I will, you've had the introduction for Dr. Hill. So Dr. Hill, you would like to say something?
Good morning. Pleasure to be here this morning. We're excited to get into our presentation and demonstration. At this point in time, I wanted to introduce our director for our not only Starfish, which we've branded as My Coyote Plan at CSM, but also our RADIA system is Mrs. Kayla McIntosh, our director for our CRM enterprise system.
Thank you again for the opportunity for being here. I'll go over some PowerPoint slides as well as do a demo of our live environment to kind of give you a look and feel of what My Coyote Plan, which is what CSN is branded Starfish, looks like. And I'm going to let you meet Jean Russell, who's our account manager at Starfish.
Thank you, everyone, for having us here today. As Kayla had said, my name is Jean Russell, and I'm the Starfish account manager. So I was a member of the team that had the discussions with Vice Chancellor McKinnon to bring Starfish to all four schools. As account manager, it's my responsibility to overarchingly manage the relationship between Starfish and our school partners. So I'm involved with the status of everything that happens among our two partnerships of organizations to really make sure that everything brings forward in a quick and seamless process. In order to really kind of understand a little bit about who we are, I just want to take a few minutes and Shirley's going to tell you about who Hobson's is as an organization, because we are an organization focused solely on education. From there, I'll give you a little bit more information about Starfish so that you understand some of the successes that we're seeing across the United States with our school partners, and then we'll get into the PowerPoint presentation so that we can then focus on our time as the Starfish demo. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you, Jean. So we wanted to just give you kind of a little overview of what Starfish is. And if you want to think about student success, we believe it starts well before they hit your campus. We believe that student success really starts all the way back in the K-12 cycle. And when the child or children are in their most vulnerable state is in middle school. We know that those grades are particularly challenging. They become disengaged many times with the educational process. So we have a product called Naviance. Everything that we do is around student success, and it's all software-based. So just to make sure that we haven't stated that before, so it is software. But we also understand that software is only a component of it. It's really the people. It's the human factor that interactions with students that really makes the difference. So what our Navient product actually provides is guidance for college readiness that we actually begin with schools all the way in middle school through high school and looking at their soft skills, honing their study habits, looking at the progress along their journey so that when they actually show up on your campus in that traditional student role coming from high school into community college, for example, they are actually more prepared to actually persevere and succeed. So that's what Navient does. What the other product that's up here is Intersect. So Intersect is really kind of the meeting between that high school experience and college. So what Intersect does is help to take all that information that's in our Navient services and says, okay, now I have these students that are now seeking to look at what is the right match for higher education for their next step. Is that a technical school? Is that a community college? Is that a four-year? You know, what does that look like for them? And based on all those skills and all those readiness factors that have gone into their journey, we then help match them up with the right educational organizations for their post-secondary. The Intersect product actually allows schools to market to those students that are their target audience as well. So if you're a community, you know, college that's recruiting from within the state, you can actually work with their high school partners and provide sort of the profile of what you're looking for, and our Intersect product helps match that up. So Intersect really is that. Starfish, which is what we're going to spend a lot of time here talking about, is when they get to your campus, when they get to that higher education segment of their education process, Starfish helps them to persevere and succeed. So is it software alone? No. We still believe that that component is only a small portion of what it takes for a student to be successful, but it actually increases the efficiency of the human factor, which we believe is what truly makes the difference for the student. So I'm going to turn this over to our wonderful folks at College of Southern Nevada. But first, Jean's going to talk a little bit about what Starfish has done and what the numbers look like behind it. Jean.
Thank you. So I have included a packet of information in front of you. This slide is a part of that packet. And it really kind of talks about who we are as an organization with Starfish. We are now partnered with almost 500 schools nationwide. And we're seeing that the impact now is 4.3 million students are actually being impacted through this technology platform at our school partners. And of those school partners, they're raising nearly 20 million flags on students across the nation. So we're seeing a lot of great impact already. We're also being recognized by organizations such as CCC for the technology platform that we're putting forward for our efforts in leading students to a guided pathway in order to really kind of help students get to the point of degree completion. I'm going to go ahead and skip the center section because we're going to learn all about My Coyote Plan by CSN directly. But our impact, I would like to talk to you a little bit about our impact that we're seeing with our school partners to date. Over 50% of our schools have seen an increase in retention rates since our product was created almost 10 years ago. A specific case I've included in your folders so that you can read the full details to is with Northwest Arkansas Community College, who has been a partner with Starfish since 2011, and they have actually increased their retention rate by over 9% over that duration. In addition, we're also seeing one in every three of our school partners increasing graduation rates. So there's a lot of really kind of great information and schools that we're learning lessons from and really kind of impacting student success across the nation. Also in your packet, I do know that ENCHI is created by 4 years as well as community colleges. There's success stories about how our platform is even impacting four-year institutions for your knowledge as well in the packet. From here, I'd like to have Stephanie and Kayla bring you through a journey of my success or my Coyote Plan at CSN and kind of talk to you about the role that it plays in their student success opportunities.
Thank you. All right. The next part of the presentation, will cover Starfish, which CSN has branded as My Coyote Plan, plan standing for Personal Learning and Advising Network, Degree Planner, and the six new components which will be added to our My Coyote Plan enterprise system as a result of the NSHE contract. These six new components will be retention score, intervention inventory, career connections, predictive modeling, project consulting, and strategic consulting. Student success requires a plan, and My Coyote Plan and Degree Planner, in combination with these six new components, will not only enable CSN to efficiently provide each student with a proactive, personalized, step-by-step roadmap to student success, which CSN defines as graduate, complete, transfer, and prosper, but it will also aid in moving us beyond marginal change, impact, and transformation. Once again, our goal is to summarize these slides so we can kind of get to that demonstration part of our time today, because it's important that you guys see that. At this time, I'm going to turn it over to Director Kayla McIntosh, and she's going to walk you through the My Coyote Plan system and also Degree Planner. Then I'll conclude our part of the presentation. Just how it's important that we not only understand that this supports student success, but it also helps us be able to demonstrate system and institutional effectiveness.
So this is our My Coyote Plan logo. My Coyote Plan is a tool that allows us to effectively provide students with a step-by-step roadmap to student success. We implemented My Coyote Plan in the spring of 2017 with a beta one that included approximately six classes, six instructors. And since then, we built out My Coyote Plan. We fully rolled it out in the fall of 2018. And this semester, spring 2019, this is the only e-alert system that we currently have at CSN. We've turned it off in PeopleSoft, so all of our alerts and most of our appointment scheduling is going through My Coyote Plan. So since the spring of 2017, we've had over 50,000 appointments and over 3,600 tracking items that were raised. And we're really proud of like the number of kudos, because that's that positive reinforcement. So we've had over 1,100 of those. We've had 1,200 flags, which are concerns, and close to 250 referrals, which say that the instructor feels that the student needs additional support. So it sends them to places such as the Centers for Academic Success, advising and coaching services, or to library services to get that additional support they need in order to be successful in their courses. At CSN, we have had great utilization of My Coyote Plan. We have representation from all six of our academic schools, as well as various academic and student support areas. Also, we have that number is still growing daily. Like, I have all kinds of meetings set up to bring other individuals from the college on to utilize My Coyote Plan, not only for that e-alert component, but also for that appointment scheduling component. At CSN, we use My Coyote Plan to help us support assessment. We do monthly data captures. We do diverse reporting across different areas, departments, and school reporting. And at the faculty level, we're also able to have them do some course data reporting. They're able to see the tracking items raised, the tracking items resolved, and the number of days it took to resolve those tracking items. We're also able to do some attendance tracking. We're also able to see students that missed appointments and students that also attended appointments. And then we also have some attributes in there to let those faculty members know if their student is a part of TRIO, if they're a Nevada Promise student, if they're an athlete, or if they're a vet student. So we have those attributes in there to help those instructors as well as staff members better identify their students. But what we would like to say is, once we get all these features that this new NSHE contract provides us, then we'll have a robust data warehouse for these instructors and staff members to pull more data out of My Coyote Plan in order to help us form a better picture of our students at CSN. With the NSHE contract, there's a lot of features that are available to all the other colleges, but at CSN, we already had purchased some of them prior to the NSHE contract. So for CSN, we're going to get the retention scores, which are current and predictive data insights into the student risk factors. And then we're also going to get the intervention inventory, which is a catalog of interventions that align with student readiness and support needs. We're going to get career connections, which is also known as PARIN, and it's a career exploration tool that matches the student's strengths, personal aspirations, education, experiences, interests, and transferable skills to a college program path. We're also getting strategic consulting, which Hobson provides a service to align with our college's needs based on our unique challenges. And then we also get the predictive modeling, which is not on the screen. It allows us insight into the historical risk factors of our students, as well as provides specific student demographics. And then at the bottom, you'll see that my Coyote plan allows us one other major benefit. It allows us to develop organizations, and what this allows us to do at CSN is to do true case management for our students based on their unique either student groups or their unique type of student that we have at CSN. So those are my slides on my Coyote plan. And within my Coyote plan, we have degree planner. So at CSN, we are in the very beginning stages of building out degree planner. And Degree Planner is CSN's academic planning module, and it consists of five different features: academic planning, academic plan templates, degree planner reporting, course details, and it also allows us to track student progress so we can do benchmarks at 25, 50, 75, and even at 100% to make sure that those students are on track. So for Degree Planner, it is the academic planning module for CSN that allows advisors and students to develop a personalized degree roadmap based on current and changing needs of our students at CSN. So that's kind of how it's operationalized for students and advisors. And then for our administrators, Degree Planner allows us to optimize our course schedule. So we can see the number of students that want to sign up for a particular course in a given semester or a future semester. So then we'll know how many course offerings we need to have, as well as the date and time that we need those course offerings. Okay, so next up is Dr. Hill. She's going to come back and she's going to tell you how My Coyote Plan and Degree Planner support student success, system, and institutional effectiveness.
Thank you, Director McIntosh. All right. Next, I want to touch upon how My Coyote Plan and Degree Planner are much more than systems that support transactional processes. It's a dynamic enrollment management platform and tool that supports student success, system and institutional effectiveness via intentional, comprehensive, and transformational engagement throughout the entire student life cycle. This first chart here outlines how My Coyote Plan currently supports and how Degree Planner will be able to support the six system-wide student success strategies that have recently been shared by NSHE. And as you see here, what we already have in place with our system, there's a number of checks and there's a number of potential opportunities where we can really show that this system can support it across the board. NSHE strategic goals. This next chart outlines how My Coyote Plan and Degree Planner support NSHE strategic goals, specifically access, success, and closing the achievement gap. It also is a dynamic tool that can be utilized by CSN's workforce development to track cohorts of students and manage and award stackable credentials that can lead to associate degrees. CSN guiding principles for improving student success. In addition to supporting NSHE success strategies and strategic goals, My Coyote Plan and Degree Planner also support the four student success levers articulated by CSN. That's right, Dr. There it goes. And those are Complete College America guided and intentional pathways, advising by design, students learn and complete, labor market success. Degree Planner supports student success and institutional effectiveness through alignment with Lever 1, Complete College America Guided and Intentional Pathways, by providing the ability to build precise, personalized degree plans, that step-by-step roadmap to success, which CSN defines as graduate, complete, transfer, and prosper. When the three components that will be new to our system are developed and implemented, that is retention scores, predictive modeling, and prospective students, My Coyote Plan will support student success and institutional effectiveness by aligning with Lever 2, Advising by Design, and providing current and predictive data insight into student risk factors and needs to inform and provide proactive academic and student support. Insight into those historical factors of risk and success specific to CSN's student demographic, as well as critical information necessary to support a holistic, personalized case management approach to student success. Once the intervention inventory and strategic consulting components are developed and implemented, My Coyote Plan will support student success and institutional effectiveness by aligning lever number 3, students learn and complete. And this is going to be demonstrated by providing a catalog of interventions that meet and support student readiness needs, as well as those strategic consulting services provided by Hobson's that aligns with CSN's needs based on our own unique goals and challenges at our institution. The development and implementation of career connections will further enable My Coyote Plan to support student success and institutional effectiveness by aligning with lever number 4, labor market success, providing a career exploration tool that matches student strengths, personal goals, education experience, and interests, as well as their transferable skill sets to pathways. At this point, I'm going to turn it back over to Jean and Shirley from Hobson's, and they're going to close us out of this part of the presentation so that we can actually move to the demonstration of the system.
We're tag teaming here. So student success, obviously, Dr. Hill did a great job in talking about that transition between college and a career. Sometimes in our world, it actually happens simultaneously, right, or concurrently. So we actually have to be cognizant of that throughout their journey. So just to give you an idea, we have one of our clients, Columbus State. They had a 67.8% retention rate in the course sections that use Starfish, compared to only 43% in the course sections that don't use Starfish. So if you just look at those statistics, they actually were an award winner at ATD in recognition of what they had done to actually move the needle on student success and really focusing in on the key areas to improve the actual student experience. So we've also looked at actually what the students say about their use and their involvement with Starfish. And they said 50% of them said that they changed their behavior because of Starfish, pointed out opportunities for services they didn't know that were available to them. They actually were more engaged by actually self-raising a flag on themselves that they actually needed help, because usually that occurred at 2 o'clock in the morning when they were studying, and it allowed them to actually do this electronically right when it was top of mind, so that it helps with their overall engagement. So the quote at the bottom, you can all read that. It's from Northwest Wisconsin Technical College, and that when they got a grant, the beauty that they had all the data that they needed to apply for their grant coming out of Starfish. So there were some side benefits that, of course, you don't think about that are actually truly very valuable. So I thought, rather than hearing from us, I thought hearing from our general manager of Starfish by Hobson's, Howard Bell, might be interesting. Oops, why isn't the video playing here? Do I need technical assistance here? It was an embedded video. Okay, perfect.
Hello, I am Howard Bell, Senior Vice President and General Manager of Starfish. Over 10 years ago, Starfish set the standard for student success technology with early alerts. We've continued to lead the industry, raising the bar to include enhanced case management tools, predictive analytics, student support integration, and academic planning. We at Starfish remain committed to setting the standard by helping you create an integrated and holistic student experience. We know that the best way to improve your students' experience is to start with a strategic plan outlining key institutional goals and metrics. In 2018, we founded our strategic consulting practice to apply change management principles that engage and excite key stakeholders across your institution to ensure you outline a clear vision and celebrate milestones. Last year, over half of Starfish clients saw an increase in retention rates, and a third graduated more students than ever. Of course, we don't think those numbers are good enough, so we're committed to supporting every Starfish client in building and documenting a strategic success plan in the coming year. We are also committed to expanding our product offering to include tools for career exploration and degree planning, allowing students to create an adaptive academic plan that not only works for all students, but also adjusts as their circumstances change. We also recognize that your roles have changed too. You're now supporting even more students than before. Starfish can help you scale your resources so that you can focus on the students who need your support by taking the guesswork out of identifying interventions and surfacing those tied to specific categories and populations. In 2019, we are growing the case management functionality by introducing recommended interventions to support programmatically identifying the best interventions for each student as they come to your office, freeing advisors to focus on the students, not the process. We look forward to continuing our partnership.
So I appreciate your attention to the short video. We actually are going to conclude the PowerPoint presentation and allow Kayla to set up the demo, which I think she's in process of doing now. So I realized that I hadn't actually mentioned what my role is. So my role is I'm the director of sales and account management for Starfish by Hobsons. And so I've been in the education space for more years than I want to admit to. And have had the pleasure of working in a lot of different areas of campuses and software. And one of the things that I really am passionate about is I love the fact that we make a difference. And so what we do is actually purposeful and insightful and actually helps make a difference in people's lives. So that's part of the reason why I'm here. Jean's here for much of the same reason, and she's been here much longer than I have, and you're very fortunate to have Jean on our team. Working with everyone in Nevada and assuring that we have a wonderful experience for your students. See how she's, you're up.
Yes, all right. Okay, so now I'm gonna go into a live demo of what my quality plan looks like at CSN. We won't be able to show you all the wonderful features of my quality plan, but I do wanna show you some of the features that we find most beneficial at CSN. So first of all, this is our home screen. So when you log into My Quality Plan, you have a home screen. And when you're on the home screen, you have a couple different areas that you're able to see. If you schedule an appointment, so if you're in our advising and coaching services or our counselors, you will see a list of all the appointments that you have for that given day, as well as we're able to see all of the recent changes that we've had in My Quality Plan. And you'll see here we have tracking items that were completed, as well as some that were raised. And then we can see the flags that I'm currently managing in My Quality Plan. So this just gives the individuals, when they log into My Quality Plan, a brief overview of everything that they're able to see. In the menu, we're also able, each individual has a profile. So they're also able to update their institutional profile, which we send some of our data over from MyCSN. So we're able to send over their title as well as their phone number as well, and also their login information in their institutional email address. They have the ability to upload a photo to My Quality Plan, and then they also, we ask that they provide some information to the student to tell the student how they use My Quality Plan. And then if they choose to go a little bit further, they can fill out the My Biography section that gives the student a little bit of information about their educational background and some of their research or study opportunities that they've had. And when the student sees them in their success network, this information populates to the student so that the student has a picture of that individual and some information at that on that individual before they actually meet them. Also in My Quality Plan, we have the appointment scheduler, which we use very heavily at CSN in our advising and coaching services department, as well as counseling in our Centers for Academic Success, which is also tutoring. Individuals are able to set up their office hours based on their availability. And so you'll see that I have office hours currently set up today from 9 until noon. And then if I go, so this is just an agenda view to give them a real easy view of what's happening today. But if I go today, you'll see that I'll have some time slots set up. And then I can schedule appointments with students based on this time slot, and students can schedule appointments with me. So at CSN, we send over every term-activated student to my Coyote Plan because there's a chance that they can meet with an advisor or counselor. So we have over 102,000 individuals that are listed in my Coyote Plan. So when that student calls in or they go to make schedule an appointment, we just simply have to start typing their name. Will it work if I type? So if we just start typing a very common last name, such as Smith, you'll see we'll get a long list of Smiths. And then, but if we know that student's NCID or if we know their email address, then we're able to click on, like, find that student a little bit quicker and schedule an appointment with that student. So I'm just going to click on the first student, and I'm not actually going to schedule this appointment. But you see when I go to the schedule that appointment, it already has the when for today from 9 to 10 because my office hour blocks were set up in hour increments. And then the where, I have, sorry, it's kind of hard to work from two different screens. And then I have my office set up there at the Henderson campus at CSN, Building C, room 115. And then they can select the reason that I'm going to meet with them. So based on the different departments, we have different reasons that a student would need to meet. And based on those reasons, we will select one. So I'm just going to say scheduling. And then if it's related to a course, then we can select the course that it's related to. And then we would just hit submit, and then this would schedule the appointment for the student. Not only would I get a calendar invite, the student also gets a calendar invite to let them know that this appointment has been scheduled. If for some reason I needed to cancel this appointment, the student receives a cancellation to their email account to let them know that this appointment has been canceled. We also have this outcomes tab that we use at CSN that allows us to track if the student missed the appointment, and it also allows us to enter any notes on this particular appointment. And then if we choose to, we can send a copy of these notes to the student. So if we make a to-do list for that student, we can send a copy of it to the student, hit submit, and it's going to send to their CSN email address as well as their personal email address if they have it in My Coyote Plan. So once you've scheduled an appointment with a student, you can see lots of different information because each student has a personalized folder. So I'm going to click on a student that I know has lots of information.
Pardon me one second, Madam Chair.
Yes.
See?
Zalal and Bogala here as kind of open meeting law counsel as well as general counsel up here in Reno. We are noticing on this PowerPoint, I believe it appears to be someone's real profile, and we're seeing detailed information about their enrollment status, as well as flags. I'm not going to say what they say, but there are flags there that show personal identifiable information and maybe FERPA-related information that I think we should remove from the screen.
Okay. So do we need to move forward with the demo, or do we need to?
If the data up there is anything beyond, sorry, Nate McKinnon for the record. If the data up there is anything beyond the directory information that was first there, just, you know, the fact of students' names there. But once you click on the student's profile or anything, you can start to see appointments, flags. I think that's what we have to just steer clear of. So we could just steer clear of that.
Okay.
And I don't know if there's a test student file in the system or not.
No, we just send over true students.
Okay, yeah.
I'll skip over that.
Yeah, if you could skip that part and just make sure that we're not seeing anything that has actual student data in it. And then we'll just, to get the general gist of the tool and how it works, that'd be great.
Okay.
Thank you, because that was my concern too. When this started, I whispered to Vice Chancellor McKinnon, "Is this real data or is this made up.
Because thank you. We do have a test environment, but it's not built out nearly as much as our production environment. So you wouldn't be able to see all of the features that are available within my quality plan. So that's the reason we kind of wanted to show you production and not show you the test environment. But we'll just go ahead and move on in the demo and show you some additional things that don't contain that type of data.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
May continue.
So at CSN, we've created a service catalog in My Coyote Plan that lists all of the services that are available. So we have each one of our areas identified by campus in My Coyote Plan. So for instance, we have our academic counseling department that is identified by campus, and it allows the students to see all of these individuals. So if I, for instance, if I click on academic counseling for the West Charleston campus, you'll see a list of all those members for that particular area. And then the student has the option to come here and schedule an appointment with those particular individuals. And then if I click on an additional service that has a little bit more information, for instance, our advising and coaching services at West Charleston, you'll see on the left-hand side that they have their hours of operation, as well as their contact information, their website, and then it also has their team members there with pictures so that the student can go in and really easily schedule an appointment with them. And then it has a brief overview of what that particular service provides to the student. Also, in this service catalog, like I said, in the service catalog, we've listed every service that we have available at CSN, as well as any additional services. They can email me, and then we can add them. But we have our international center. We have the multicultural center. We even have our OTS help desk. So we just have all different types of services that are listed in My Coyote Plan. Also, in My Coyote Plan, I won't click on the screens, but we have a place where we can see all the tracking items that are currently raised on a student. And when those tracking items are raised, the not only does the instructor get a copy of those tracking items, our e-alert team at CSN also gets a copy, and then they reach out to those students to provide some wraparound services to help those students resolve those tracking items. And they're also able to do reporting off of those to see how many days those tracking items were raised, as well as how many and how long they were open. And then we also have an intake form in My Coyote Plan that the students fill out at the point of orientation so that we're able to get some information such as their educational goals, such as if they have any potential obstacles, so that we can provide those students with those services early before they actually start having classes. And then we also ask them about extracurricular and co-curricular activities in order to provide that to our campus life leadership and development team, so that they can send some communications to those students as well about upcoming events. And then each instructor also has a course roster in My Coyote Plan, so that they're able to see their course rosters, raise those flags, kudos, and referrals on their students, so if they do not have to do them individually, they can bulk raise those as well. And I think that covers everything, since I can't go into all the different screens. So are there any questions?
Go ahead, Vice Chair, Sam.
Sam Lieberman, for the record. Quick question. This presentation has been centered around CSM. Is it tailored, if we were talking about WNC, is just the names changed? Or are there things that are incorporated for other campuses to personalize it based on their programs, or what is that situation?
excuse me. Yes, it's actually customizable.
Can you please state your name for the record?
Oh, sorry. Jean Russell from Hobson's. Each campus has the ability to customize Starfish platform based on their specific needs. So all of the tracking items, which are flags, kudos, referrals, and to-dos within the system, are set up in manner in which it matters on their end. The servicing centers are customizable. Everything's really kind of linked to however they're set up on their campus. Part of the implementation process talks through the workflows on how you can actually do that. In addition, we provide best practices within the general tenant so that you have ideas of what kind of kudos you can raise, what kind of flags you can create, things like that.
One more question. You have been very honest, and you have said to us that this is not to replace human contact advising. Is that boldly said on the front of the system so that a student will not hide behind the computer program and not seek face-to-face advising? I know that's so, weird.
So within the, this is Jean Russell again, within the platform, you can actually schedule appointments and see advisors either in person, online, or over the phone. So it depends on how you schedule that appointment to determine how that methodology is kind of done. The information as you are, the system is set up so that everybody has a role and responsibility within the system. So if you are in a role that is linked to, maybe I'm the advisor of the business college. So students within the business college would be able to see my information because I have a relationship with those students. So everything's kind of set up based on what is your role, what is your responsibility, and then what do you do on that campus to ensure that the information is only shareable to the appropriate people. Does that help?
Sort of. My concern is that if somebody's having a crisis at 2 o'clock in the morning, they may not be at a place that's going to drive them to go down the hall and see a human being. It might be easier to try to do it on the computer, which may help them solve their problem short term, but won't help long term. I don't want them to hide behind the computer program and not have, I want them to be forced to go to human interaction.
So the system is actually, this is Jean Russell again. The system is accessible 24/7, but when an action is taken within the platform, that person who you're reaching out to or the service center that you're reaching out to is actually notified so that when the service center opens up, say at 8 o'clock in the morning, they're actually seeing all the contact that was made throughout the night so that they're following up directly with that student with their needs.
Thank you. I understand. I may not see the... Anyway, thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Yes, Regent Carter.
A couple questions. So you said the flags and the kudos are customizable. Do you have best practices towards that? Or I guess maybe the question might be better for Nate. Nate, are you facilitating the discussion of what would constitute a flag and a kudos for our community colleges?
So our implementation is handled directly by Jean and her team at each institution. And so I think if you could actually speak to how you guide institutions on that when you're establishing the setup of the kudos, flags, et cetera, and what the process is.
Certainly. This is Jean Russell speaking. When a client first comes on board to Starfish, you're provided a test tenant that has best practices from the schools who started off with early alert that it was able to track and manage, you know, what kind of reactions do we get based on certain types of positive reinforcement kudos, tracking items versus flags, which are voices of concern. So the tenant is actually preconceived or pre-configured with our best practices for which they're the main points that have gotten the most traction with helping a student be successful. So for instance, we know that by having an early progress report to say the student has not attended, it gets the student to actually take action to either drop the course early on so they're not running into any return to Title IV problems, and they're able to find another class to replace that class so that they're still maintaining full-time credits. Kudos, we know that a student, when a student has been struggling in class and the student has had low test scores before, if they've gone ahead and they've changed their behavior by seeking tutoring services and other services on campus and they've changed that behavior, we actually see increasing opportunities for students to persist in class when they're provided a kudo as a result of making great effort in that term. So every single tenant has best practices, kudos and flags, referrals and tracking items set up as determined by our community who's implemented the services and used the services before.
Question from Regent Carvalho.
This question may be geared more towards President Z or Dr. Hill or even President Hilgerson. I'm curious, how do the students know to use this? Are they given it some sort of orientation when they begin classes at your institutions? And how does this look to them on the website? Is this something that's integrated into with grades and things like that, or do they have to go to a separate website in order to see this? Okay. Dr. Stephanie Hill for the record. It's easily accessible. It's part of our single sign-on, and so it's something that is not only easily accessible for students at the forefront, but it's also something that is embedded in the Canvas shells within the course. We have a robust communication plan in ARC. It's something that's part of orientation. It's something that our advisors and counselors actively introduce students to during their one-on-one appointments. It's something that we actually have a web page on our website that's totally dedicated to this. We have our usage with faculty and staff across the institution has grown tremendously organically, and so it's even through that. And so we actually have an opportunity to engage more of our staff and faculty, because we have students, as they are engaging with our website and our institution, they're actually creating profiles in this system, and so they're there. They're wanting to engage in it, and so we're doing everything we can to cover all the those opportunities to engage students. Yeah. And one thing we also do is we get feedback from all of our users, from our students, our faculty, and staff, so we can continually make improvements.
Thank you. And we'll go to President Hilgerson in Reno, and then I think Regent Carter, did you have another question? We'll go to you after that. Thank you.
Hi, so I'm Karen Hilgerson, Truckee Meadows Community College for the record, and I hope that I can add to the definition of what Starfish does. And I want to start by saying that I love Starfish. I think it is a dreamy tool. I think the Starfish team provides a lot of wonderful support. One of the best features of Starfish, which has not been mentioned today, and what I'd like to try to explain, is to me the one that is the most fascinating from the standpoint of data analytics. So imagine you're a student and you have five different faculty members, and let's say, and there are a number of alerts that I call them the thin ice alert, meaning you got a low test score or you have absenteeism, or maybe a faculty member even suspects a learning disability, which is affecting your progress. So imagine if all five faculty members were active Starfish users, and this is what we're trying to get to this place at TMCC, but it's slow going. A faculty member will identify a behavior. They'll go into their Canvas roster, do an alert that is sent through Starfish. So if all five faculty members communicate to Starfish about student progress, that message is sent to our advising or counseling staff, and we're doing outreach to the student on that, and we're referring them to, it could be tutoring, it could be, please go talk to your faculty members. They have a problem with this or that. So we're actually using it in kind of the other direction along with some of the advising tools. To me, it's more about, and maybe it's because my background is instruction, it's more about the thin ice alerts that as community college faculty, when you have a couple hundred students, it's not necessarily second nature to you. Starfish is a tool that makes it very easy to continually alert the student to progress. So to me, that's the value. And if one student is getting a number of alerts from all of their faculty members, then that kind of flags, wow, red alert, you're on thin ice. And as a college, we want to intervene and help you and make sure that you understand that you're on thin ice, which frankly, I've had thousands of community college students over the years, and several hundred of them didn't understand that they were on thin ice. So I think the value is that data analytics piece that's moving from instruction to this database portal that can then be send flags that we can act on through outreach in a variety of ways, including referral to appropriate services. I hope this helps.
Thank you, Dr. Hilgerson. And Regent Carter?
My question was along that same line there that you were talking about. The data in from faculty as far as student progress and attendance, like how was the outreach or training to the faculty or the response from the institutions that are rolling that out? Because that's where you get the actionable data.
Dr. Stephanie Hill, I want to make sure I understand your question, and it was what are our efforts to train the faculty, inform them of how to best utilize that feature of it?
Are you trying to get them to enter in attendance and progress as part of this process? And
how? Oh, absolutely. And what we try to do, because, you know, sometimes you have to get people interested in using it and supporting it one thing at a time. And so through our information education and our outreach efforts across campus, we do a lot of information sessions, we do a lot of one-on-one trainings, group trainings, not just for faculty and staff, but for students as well. And so we try to get, we expose them to the fullness of the system with the invitation to, if there's one thing about this that is inviting and interesting to you, be it attendance, be it the kudos, the e-alerts, or whatever, if we can just get you engaged initially with one thing, we're going to find that if you have a good experience with that, that is also further confirmed by the good experiences that your other faculty colleagues are having, then at some point, in what we've been seeing in the organic growth of the usage of the system by faculty, is that they're using more than one feature. And the one thing that is appealing to a number of our faculty that are engaged in the system is the attendance, is the e-alert, is the kudos, is the flags, is the ability to be able to address those thin ice things and be really engaged in that and be proactive in really mentoring students through success in that course. And so, yeah. Did I answer your question?
Yes, I didn't know what percentage or if you're I guess this far in the process, what percentage of faculty are participating in that?
Oh, you know, we haven't even looked at it from a percentage standpoint in comparison to full-time tenured faculty or even including our adjunct faculty, but we can look at that. Kayla, do you have an idea of the number? Because I can't remember, but we can get that for you. We've looked at it before, but it's been a minute. But we just know it's growing in the positive direction for sure.
Jean Russell for the record. Interesting enough, faculty involvement is really on a trend right now with Starfish because they play such a critical role in the pathway of understanding which students are at risk. So what we're seeing our schools do now is a progress survey is the ability for a faculty member to raise concerns, tracking items, kudos, or flags at a specific moment in time. And so what we're seeing now is we're seeing presidents doing short-term videos prior to at the point of the announcement for the progress surveys coming, explaining the role that faculty members play in understanding which students are at risk. And so these videos are saying and asking their faculty members to please take the moment and take this time and tell us which students are struggling, because that's the only way that we'll be able to work as a campus to help move student success along. So these leading videos into the announcements of these progress surveys by provosts and presidents are really taking a stand right now and helping get those higher numbers of faculty involvement. Some schools are actually showing 90% of their faculty responding to these progress surveys as a result of that.
Thank you. Vice Chancellor McKinnon?
Yeah, I just wanted to add to the commentary here, if I could. It's like that old television commercial for Hair Club for Men, where I'm not just the president, I'm also the client, you know. I'm a client of Starfish from a faculty perspective as a adjunct faculty at TMCC, and I found it just incredibly helpful in ensuring student progress. I've raised flags for attendance and had some of those successfully resolved. I've raised flags for concerns of receiving a C or lower for students, with those being successfully resolved too. I've recently set it up where I keep attendance in a different client in our Canvas, and we've set it up where if you miss two of my classes, it automatically raises a flag in Starfish and alerts the same processes that would be in place as if I went in and originally did that. And so, you know, I see a tremendous value. I also see some of the challenges in getting something like this off the ground. First of all, the implementation to get it up and running is not to be taken lightly, and the team at CSN should be commended for where they are right now. The team at TMCC should also be commended for where they are right now. They are just, I think, probably a few hundred yards behind where CSN is. They've been right there moving together to implement the different pieces of this. And our two smaller institutions, WNC and GBC, started in the fall and are moving rapidly towards this as well. But it takes a lot of time and energy from all the folks at our institutions. Just want to make sure that we, you know, recognize how important that is. But lastly is that the faculty absolutely are essential to this. You know, without the faculty, it doesn't end up working. Really just appreciate all the involvement of everyone.
We're going to take a quick 10-minute break. We have a technical problem that needs to be addressed, so 10-minute break. So we'll just close out the Starfish presentation. Regent Perkins had a question.
Okay. Hello. Thank you, Madam Chair. Early in the presentation, it was said that you can adjust classes or class loads depending on what students wanted and needed with using the data and metrics that you got from Starfish. Can that same information be used to schedule like counseling times and change the times? Like I understood on the presentation, it was like from 8 to 5 for counseling. So, can Starfish metrics be used to change those counseling times to also accommodate students?
Jean Russell, I'm speaking. What you're referencing to in FIRST is the course planner. So within Degree Planner, you have the ability to forecast the demand for courses based on the various different degree plans that students have registered for. So a degree plan actually tells a student throughout their entire course of time at the institution what courses they need to take based on prerequisites, co-requisites, and the like. So you have a vision into what is the demand of how many students are going to need, you know, accounting 132 in fall of 2020. So you actually can determine caseloads and course scheduling based on this information within the degree planner. Servicing centers can actually utilize the information from the perspective of, is there a peak time in which students cancel more appointments or no show to the appointments? And you can actually make adjustments to the schedules and the office hours that are available to be meeting with those entities based on that information and the analysis of that information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. And I just want to shout out to Dr. Z for including the fact that all the colleges need this. I see this as transformative software for us for student access, success, and certainly closing the achievement gap. And coordinating through the vice chancellor, I'd love to see the institutions get together and set their benchmarks and based on the national results of your 10 years of data. I see this as a huge data driver. And when we follow the data, we're going to make those goals that we've set by 2025. So, Dr. Z, do you have a comment?
Madam Chair, Federico Zaragoza, President of CSN, for the record. I just wanted kind of to elaborate that it has been a collaborative process,
yes,
and that moving forward, you can continue to see the same type of dialogue amongst our sister institutions. There could even be opportunities, I think, for joint support amongst the colleges to make sure that we're all kind of ramping up with the same kind of momentum and that we have the same support systems. Because the other part is once you've set it up, you've got to maintain it. So I think there's a lot of dialogue ahead to continue to move this forward.
Thank you. And Regent Lieberman had a comment or question?
Just a comment. I think this system is fabulous. I'm sorry about the hiccups that we had this morning, but I'd love to see this issue be brought back in 6 months to a year so we can see how it's going. And also, if somebody could create for us a model, a mock system that we could go in and explore legally without having the data in question, I think it would be great for us to be able to individually work the system and learn more about it.
Okay, thank you. Regent McAdoo?
Yes, I wanted to just ditto what you said about President Z. And honestly, for all the presidents, I just see such a collaborative spirit among our 8 institutional presidents and the NSHE system to provide higher education to the highest quality that we can across Nevada. And I'm just really grateful for that. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, we're going to go out of order. We've got one of our presenters has to leave by 10. So we're going to go to item 9, the Institutional Advisory Council meetings. And we're going to start with TMCC in the north.
Good morning, Nancy McCormick from the TMCC IAC Vice Chair. As you know, the IAC has not met since last Community College Board of Regents meeting when Clifton Maplin gave the report. I personally am deeply saddened by the sudden passing of Mr. Maplin. He and I have been working together and friends for the last 15 years. He's always been extremely engaged in the community as a big brother. And in other organizations, he was a great leader and mentor, and he will very much be missed. The next meeting for the TMCC IAC is May 10th, and we will learn about and discuss several topics, including the NSHE co-requisite policy proposal. I understand that TMCC is enthusiastic about the co-requisite model and believe it will help a portion of the students accelerate and graduate. I also understand that there are concerns about the NSHE draft that no longer permits colleges like TMCC to offer standalone math at below the 90 level. After our meeting, we will offer our perspective as the IAC on this change to the open door mission of TMCC and any positive or negative effects that it may have on the region. So that concludes my update, and I appreciate the opportunity to represent the IAC here today.
Thank you, Nancy, and thank you for your service and time. We'll go to GBC.
Madam Chair, GBC did not have a representative from the IAC for this meeting. We'll be presenting in June.
Okay, thank you. Or July. Next meeting's in July. We'll go to
July, yes. Yes.
North?
Madam Chair, Rob here for the record. What I would like to do, if it's okay with you, is defer my remarks to my presentation under item number 11 and combine those together. If
that's excellent.
Possible.
I was going to hope you say that. So we'll go back down south to College of Southern Nevada.
Good morning, Chair Del Carlo and members of the Community College Committee. Nancy Brune, Chair of the IAC for CSN, for the record. So our CSN IAC has met formally once this year, which is actually a little bit behind. We normally meet 4 to 6 times a year. And we actually had our first meeting this past week. We were very pleased to have Regent Lieberman with us for that meeting, and we were pleased to celebrate his birthday with him. So thank you for joining us. At that meeting, we received a presentation on CSN's legislative priorities and had an update. We also had a very detailed presentation update on CSN's transition to the multi-campus model. Throughout the year, our CSN IAC members have been supporting CSN, its work, its students, and its priorities in various individual capacities. So, for example, right now, two of our IAC members are serving on the selection panel or interview committee for two of the vice presidents of the two CSN campuses. Many of our members have been supporting CSN's legislative priorities this year, either by testifying or by writing letters of support. Here I will note that in previous years, our IAC has tried to meet before the legislative session, and as a group, we would go through each of CSN's priorities and as a group decide whether we wanted to endorse them as a full IAC or if there was a lack of agreement about the priority, we would choose not to endorse it as a full IAC, and individual members could support their priorities as they felt the need to. This year, because of timing issues, we just couldn't meet before the start of the legislative session. So this is the first time we actually haven't met to endorse all of CSN's priorities as a group. That said, individual IAC members are testifying, as I mentioned, or writing letters of support to support CSN's priorities. I know we had lots of folks turn out to support the CSN Nevada State College Health Sciences Building earlier this session. So we are active, but more as individual members. The highlight of our work thus far this year has been our CSN field trip for CCSD school counselors. This idea was probably a year in the making, and we finally executed in February. So just to give you a little bit of background or context as to why we landed on this idea of hosting and organizing a CSN field trip for our counselors down here, over the course of probably the last couple of years, we've noticed that high school counselors don't often know or think about CSN when they're talking to high school students about post-secondary opportunities. In fact, at one of our meetings, one of our IAC members shared that his son had talked to a counselor about what to do after he graduated, and the counselor mentioned UNR and UNLV and even other colleges in other states, and they didn't mention CSN. So as a member of the IAC, he was a little disturbed, and we're also realizing that a lot of our high school counselors went to school 7 years ago, 15 years ago, and they don't understand or have a good understanding, some of them, about the skills and competencies required by those companies that represent Nevada's new economy. And so the idea was to literally load folks or CSD school counselors on a bus and take them on a field trip to show them some of Nevada's new economies companies. And so that's just what we did. And so in February, we had almost two dozen high school counselors join us for a field trip. We started at the CSN North Las Vegas campus, and Dr. Margot Martin gave a very warm welcome. From that point, Dr. Martin and actually four of our deans, including Dean Lanigan, who's here with us, joined us along with the school counselors, and we went around. We visited three companies across the valley. The first one was Chelton House, which aligns with advanced manufacturing. We then went on to Haddington Dynamics, which is a smaller company, but aligns with robotics. And our final company was Varian Medical Devices, which is a New York Stock Exchange company that deals with medical technology and devices. And while we had our counselors sort of hostage on the bus, the deans talked to them about the different CSN programs that aligned with the companies they had just traveled to visit. I do want to give a special thank out to our IAC members. Three of them donated money to fund the bus, the breakfast, and the lunch. And I also want to give a special shout out to Maria Marinch, who's our executive director of inclusive learning and engagement. We had the idea, but once we identified the company, she really did all of the heavy lifting at CSN and from their end to organize it and made sure it ran smoothly. So I want to share a couple of things. After the event, Maria sent out a survey. We had 100% participation all of the counselors said that they actually learned more about CSN and that they, as a result, would like to learn more about CSN's programming. And they also, 100% of them said that they would do it again and were going to tell friends to do the next one. Maria's actually been in conversations with CCSD since that event back in February, and they loved it so much and thought it was so valuable that they want us to do 4 field trips a year now. They want to do 2 for their elementary middle school counselors and 2 for their high school counselors. And so we're in conversations now. We think this is a great opportunity for branding for CSN and maybe the IAC. And some of our IAC members have already said they will support and help fund the project. So we'll be working on trying to develop that and have it ready for the next school year. And that concludes my presentation. And if there are any questions, I'm happy to address those. Thank you.
Thank you for such an excellent report and such a great idea to do those field trips. And hopefully we don't always have a lot of action items, but I think the real value of these meetings is the information that we share amongst each other. And I would love to see the other 3 institutions copy that model. I mean, that sounds terrific. And we all know that those high school counselors, those middle school counselors, they are the very front line to our students to get them on that career ready or college path. So thank you for your report. Okay, we'll go on to our next item, the Nevada Promise update, and a Vice Chancellor McKinnon, please. Thank you. I skipped over Dr. Z's CSN's mid-cycle evaluation report.
Madam Chair, Federico Zaragoza, President of CSN, for the record, Dr. Martin Margo is going to make the presentation on the mid-cycle report.
Thank you.
Good morning. Margo Martin, Vice President for Academic Affairs at the College of Southern Nevada, for the record. So, Chair DiCarlo, Regents, Vice Chancellor McKinnon, colleagues, it is my pleasure this morning to provide this committee with an update on CSN's accreditation status. CSN has been engaged in our most recent accreditation journey since fall of 2015, when our last Year 7 site visit occurred. While this presentation will focus primarily on CSN's mid-cycle accreditation visit, it is relevant to provide a timeline that reflects the series of scheduled and ad hoc reports and site visits that have occurred during the past 3.5 years, most of which have focused on the following 3 recommendations. I know that's a lot of words. But essentially, recommendation focuses on assessment of general education core, as well as all courses, programs, and degrees across all sites and delivery modalities. Recommendation 2 focuses on systemic evaluation of academic and non-academic programs and services and the use of that evaluation in decision making. And then recommendation number 3 focuses on CSN's connecting all the planning and budgeting to document that CSN is using its mission, core themes, and objectives as the basis for making decisions and allocating resources. The mid-cycle visit, it's conducted in the 3rd year of the 7-year cycle. This mid-cycle evaluation is intended to ascertain an institution's readiness to provide evidence or outcomes of mission fulfillment and sustainability in the Year 7 Mission Fulfillment Report. It is to assist institutions in determining if the process of outcomes assessment will lead the institution to a successful mission fulfillment, self-evaluation, and peer evaluation. The visit is intended to be a formative and collegial evaluation with the institution in conversation with its evaluators. Therefore, the purpose of the CSN mid-cycle review and visit last fall was to assess the likelihood that CSN would be prepared to meet the requirements and standards of the Year 7 accreditation review, which is scheduled for fall of 2022. and to offer observations about ongoing commission recommendations, those three recommendations I just shared, from previous self-evaluation reports. Preparation for writing the mid-cycle self-evaluation report and the subsequent site visit began in early spring of 2018. Academic affairs leaders convened a team that included members from Faculty Senate, Student Affairs, Academic Affairs, Assessment, and Institutional Research. Several members of the team attended trainings provided by the Northwest Commission. In addition, Faculty Senate played a critical role in crafting numerous policies that demonstrated CSN's commitment to planning, assessment, and resource allocation efforts that are intended to lead toward continuous improvement. In anticipation of our mid-cycle report and visit, Faculty Senate, under the leadership of immediate past chair, Senate Chair Jill Acree, mobilized to develop policies on institutional assessment, integrated strategic planning, academic assessment, and general education requirements, which were imperative for CSN to demonstrate that we were actively addressing the three recurring recommendations. Moreover, deans and faculty were engaged to select programs that highlight our current assessment efforts as part of the self-evaluation report and in response to the addendum reports. Notably, our non-academic units of the college identified assessment champions, participated in numerous assessment trainings, and developed unit goals, metrics, and outcomes to support this work. And we selected a writer, English professor Deborah Berry, to knit together our story with one consistent voice. This report and response to the three recommendations was submitted to the Northwest Commission in September of 2018, just last fall. Last October, CSN hosted two evaluators, peer evaluators, from the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities. Prior to the visit, these evaluators reviewed the college's mid-cycle self-evaluation report that had been submitted in September. And during the visit, the Northwest Commission's evaluation team expressed their appreciation for the time and energy the CSN faculty, administration, staff, and students devoted to the site visit. And they were very impressed by the number of individuals who were involved. To share a bit about the report itself, the self-evaluation has three parts. Part one is an overview of CSN's institutional assessment plan, which is a narrative describing the institution's plan for linking and aligning CSN's mission with mission fulfillment and sustainability, addressing assessment plans, stakeholder engagement, validity of core themes and performance metrics, and potential changes that will lead to increased mission fulfillment and sustainability. Part two presents two representative examples of how CSN has operationalized its mission and core themes, progressing from objectives to indicators to outcomes to mission fulfillment. This portion of the self-evaluation explores whether indicators and data being collected are effective, meaningful, and sufficient. The examples that CSN selected to represent student learning assessment or CSN's Supplemental Instruction Initiative for Biology 189 students, and our Assessment in Action Initiative involving effective library instruction. And part three is a self-reflection on what CSN needs to do to be ready for year seven in 2022. The mid-cycle addendum was submitted as a separate document compiled with evidence of CSN's continued efforts to address, once again, the three recommendations from the year seven visit in 2015. Such examples included assessment efforts in terms of student learning outcome achievement, general education assessment, and institutional learning outcomes. Also provided were examples of the new policies that impact planning, assessment, resource allocation, and program review timelines, as well as CSN's new institutional effectiveness and assessment plan. In the self-evaluation report and during the site visit, with the participation of more than 90 stakeholders from across the college, CSN successfully presented an organizational plan which guided the work in preparing for the mid-cycle review and responding to the three remaining recommendations from the fall 2015 Year 7 peer evaluation report. The peer evaluation team and the Northwest Commission have determined that CSN is indeed poised to move ahead with key initiatives central to the 2022 Year 7 review. And this is good news. The evaluation team noted that CSN's initiatives are dedicated to the success of students and the commitment on the part of the senior administrative leadership team, including President Zaragoza, to ensuring the acceptance and success of the initiatives. The evaluation team was also impressed with the deep commitment to assessment, continuous improvement, and mission fulfillment shared by the 90-plus faculty, staff, and administrators with whom the team met over a two-day period. Again, I cannot emphasize enough the importance of the role of the faculty, particularly the Faculty Senate. The work of the faculty during the past academic year provided the evidence to demonstrate that CSN has moved beyond planning and CSN is now actively engaged in executing those plans. Ultimately, our peer evaluators and the Northwest Commission have determined that CSN is taking the appropriate steps in preparing for our Year 7 accreditation report. So I'm delighted to share the good news that CSN received formal notification and official record of action taken by the Northwest Commission at its meeting on January 9th through 11th of this year, accepting our fall 2018 mid-cycle self-evaluation report and addendum. As noted by Northwest's review, CSN is on the right path to successfully address the three recommendations and is prepared to meet the standards required of the fall 2022 Year 7 self-evaluation report. CSN is currently finalizing our strategic plan focused on mission fulfillment. CSN has demonstrated an emerging culture of assessment across the institution, and CSN has launched an institutional effectiveness and assessment plan connecting mission fulfillment, assessment, and resource allocation. I am personally very proud of the progress made by our institution in a fairly short amount of time, and I'd like to thank the senior leadership team and the multitude of administrators, faculty, staff, and students who've been involved with our accreditation efforts. This was indeed a team effort, and I especially would like to recognize Clarissa Cota, who served as our interim vice president for academic affairs during this experience. She also served as the accreditation liaison officer and provided significant leadership leading up to the fall 2018 mid-cycle report and site visit. Clarissa? The Coyote Nation is ready to continue the pursuit of excellence and looking forward to the fall 2022 Year 7 self-evaluation report and site visit. And I just want to let you know there are a number of people that are in the room today. So I open this up for any questions you might have. And there are several of us here that would be happy to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you for such a positive report. Good job. Do we have any questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, we all know that the accreditation is just a part of higher ed, and I take it as it's a report card. So it really focuses on our shortcomings and addressing them, and then that continuous improvement. And kudos to you for such a great involvement with your Faculty Senate, because we can't do this alone. I mean, it takes all of us. So thank you very much for that great report. Okay, now it's Vice Chancellor McKinnon on the Nevada Promise update.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nate McKinnon for the record. For the newer members of the committee, the Nevada Promise Scholarship is a scholarship that began last biennium in the 2017 legislative session. It is a last dollar scholarship modeled after the very successful Tennessee Promise Scholarship that exists in that state and has been there for quite some time. The general gist of the requirements of the scholarship are that a student coming out of high school will need to complete a myriad of tasks in their senior year to be eligible for the scholarship, and then continue certain tasks throughout their academic career at a community college in order to remain eligible. The scholarship includes a requirement to complete an application by October 31st of the senior year. It then includes a requirement to complete a first training before December 31st of that same senior year, complete a second training in the spring of the senior year, complete 20 hours of community service and log it by April 30th of their senior year, and then also meet with a mentor in their senior year before April 30th that's assigned by the institution. All four of our community colleges are participating. Currently, where we are in the overall scholarship world of Nevada Promise is that we have our first cohort of students who graduated high school in 2018 entering into the community college, the community colleges they attend in the fall of 2018 and are now in their first year at their institution. At the same time, we're working to bring on our second cohort of students, who is this year's graduating class of 2019 from the high schools across Nevada. So today I'm going to provide you a brief update on where we are with our data perspective for the second class as we move in. And then at the end, I'll also provide a brief update on how we're doing with some of our anticipated changes to Nevada Promise in the future. So our application window closed October 31st, and at that time, we had 14,310 applications received. This year, we break those down by new applicants, what we call the fall 2019 cohort. Those are the students who are currently seniors in high school and would be entering this fall as freshmen at a community college. We then have returning applicants. Those are the students I mentioned who are currently enrolled receiving the Nevada Promise Scholarship at one of our community colleges, and they graduated high school last year and entered in the fall of 2018. So as you can see, our total number of new applicants was 13,530. That was up about 10% over the previous year's new applicants, which is a very welcome message for us across the system. So our total number of applications, 14,310. I think to no surprise, the majority of those are at CSN. At 10,812. The next step for students was to complete their first training, at least for new students. Returning students did not have a requirement to complete the initial training again in the fall. That's only a requirement for new applicants. And so you can see there, this is typically the point we see, based on 2 years of data now, quite a cliff, if you will, and a significant amount of melt between the students who do the very simple task of filling out an online application that takes all of 60 seconds to actually showing up or completing an online training as required by the scholarship before December 31st, 2018. So our number there is 6,475 students out of that 14,000 students in total that did that. Actually out of the 13,530 students who did that in total. The next major step that we had as a milestone in the Promise process is the requirement that the individual students complete a FAFSA, that's the free application for federal student aid, by April 1st. So the deadline of April 1st has now passed. This is still preliminary data, and actually I have a brief update to this, but as you can see, our total number of new applicants was 3,157, returning applicants 537. For a total of 3,694. I will tell you that as of this morning, that number's up about a little over 100 students in addition to that as the reports trickle in to our institutions of who actually completed the FAFSA by April 1st. There are some students still held in suspense, which sounds exciting, but it's just a financial aid term I've learned. And so they are, that's still being processed at each of our institutions. So that's our total number of students who've completed FAFSA by this point. So now these students, these 3,694 students, before April 30th, 2019, need to complete 20 hours of community service, and hopefully most of them are very close to if haven't already finished, although we did see last year quite a push towards the end of April for people who maybe had procrastinated a bit in getting their community service done. And then we also see a big push for students to meet with their mentor if they've not done that already. Both of those things, as well as completing the second training, are required by the Nevada Promise statute in order to participate going into the next year. So if we take a look of how we're doing, is our percent of applicants still eligible as of 4-1? So this is for new students only. This is our graduating class of 2019 from the high schools who would enter in the fall 2019 at a community college. I think you can see we're sort of all over the place here. Our total is 23.3%. I think kudos to Truckee Meadows Community College for leading the pack on this in terms of 41% of their original new applicants remained eligible as of 4-1, having completed the FAFSA. So really great work there from that institution. This is always a challenge of messaging to students, especially in large numbers, to get them to complete the FAFSA. And for all we know, some students may have, again, completed the application with no intent of attending a community college. That's okay, so long as they're going to attend post-secondary education somewhere from our perspective. And sometimes it's hard to know whether or not those students actually did that. We are engaged in a, there's been a qualitative study done by UNLV on Promise students, and that was actually presented yesterday to the legislature. And we also are engaging in a national study that's funded by the Gates Foundation on multi-state comparisons of Promise programs. So we hope to learn a bit more in the coming year about where these students are going ultimately, what their motives are, and why they're choosing Promise and that pathway, or more importantly, why they're not choosing that. But ultimately, I think we still have some really good work to do. Again, this is preliminary data, so we hope to see those numbers tick up as we pick up more students who had completed the FAFSA in a timely fashion. The only other thing I'd like to mention is there is a Senate Bill 350 in front of the legislature right now. It was actually heard yesterday by the Assembly Committee on Education. It was heard just a couple weeks ago on CSN Day at the legislature, well-timed by the Senate Committee on Education. That bill provides some technical changes to the Nevada Promise Scholarship, and if successfully passed, would then require the Board of Regents to approve policy guidelines on the specifics of the program. One of the things we're looking at, for example, is the current timeline in the bill between the April 1st FAFSA deadline and the April 30th deadline of completing all financial aid paperwork is a very short turnaround. And our institution struggled last year, and I think they're struggling again this year, with students who are selected for verification and all they need to do. And if they waited till the very end on their FAFSA, they now have just a month to finish verification and get it done, or they're no longer eligible. And so those are the types of things I think that our institutions and the folks running this terrific program on the ground have realized that this is really hard, and it's hard for students. And so we don't want to throw up additional barriers on timelines, et cetera, that make it difficult. So we'll keep you updated on the status of that legislation. And if it passes, we'll be back before the board to provide updated guidelines and policies for the Nevada Promise Scholarship. That concludes my update, Madam Chair. I'll see if there are any questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor McKinnon. Any questions? Okay, Regent Cavallo.
Thank you. First of all, do you have any information if the comparison between the Nevada Promise Scholarship is similar in terms of persistence or students moving on with it compared to maybe the Tennessee model? And also, I'm surprised at the low numbers of returning applicants. Can you elaborate on, and do you know why we have such low numbers there?
Thank you very much, Nate McKinnon, for the record. So to answer your first part, we don't yet have analysis on the comparison of our students compared to Tennessee or any other state. And the reason we don't is we only have one full semester under our belt. So the only data we would potentially have, and we don't yet have access to it, is the fall to spring persistence rate for this current academic year. I would like to have as part of our national study that we are a partner in, have that be a part of this, and something that they are looking to see is how our promise students in various states persisting compared to each other, how are they persisting compared to non-promise students as well. So that's something that that we're looking to get them data on, but the timeline of where we are right now in our academic year, which is having our first cohort in their spring semester now, makes it challenging to have that. But more to come, I hope, in the future on that. To your second point on the numbers, the number of students presented, in order for a student to be eligible to renew a Nevada Promise Scholarship, under the current legislation, they would have to have received money from the scholarship fund in the first year. We have a number of students who completed all Promise Scholarship steps and enrolled in our community colleges who actually did not need any money from the Promise Scholarship account. So as I mentioned at the beginning, the Promise Scholarship is a last dollar program. For a number of our students who are lower income and perhaps have a low expected family contribution from their FAFSA completion, they would not necessarily, in a lot of cases, need any additional funding for their mandatory registration fees that the Promise Scholarship would cover. Not to say they couldn't use more money, but from the perspective of what the Promise Scholarship covers versus their unmet need for mandatory registration fees, they did not have any that would be eligible for Promise dollars. So the number that you see was actually lower in the fall in terms of those who actually received dollars. And I'm sorry I didn't include that slide because that would have been a healthy comparison. But happy to get you the presentation from the November Community College Committee meeting where we showed the number of students actually receiving money across the system. And so our hope is that the Promise Scholarship continues to grow. And we're also very hopeful that it sends a message to high school students that if you follow these steps, you can go to college and not have any mandatory registration fees. For some of those students, that will come from other sources of financial aid. And for the others, this program helps with that message. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Regent McMichael?
Yes, I see by the chart the number of students, but is there an additional breakdown on the ethnic background on the students and male and female?
Thank you, Nate McKinnon, for the record. We don't have that right now for the applicant pool. We did present on that last year, and I'd be happy to bring that back once we have a better sense of who the students are actually enrolling at the institutions. Like our population of students at our community colleges in general, they are a majority female. We know that. That was our previous cohort, and I would assume this next cohort would look somewhat similar to that. But they were also, in our first cohort, we had also a majority of Hispanic students as well. And so we were very excited to see great diversity from that perspective. So we did present that in the first year, and I think we will have that final data later this summer and would be able to bring that back at a future meeting.
Regent Carter.
So I guess just a thought that came to mind. Do we market this as a system? Do we have like a poster or something that we could get into the high schools, into the guidance counselor rooms that have, here's the steps, here's the scholarship, here's the institutions, or are any institutions marketing it?
So I'll speak from a system perspective, and we do certainly some press releases, and we also put the, we have a website for it that redirects everybody to the singular application, because if you remember, we created a single application for this scholarship, so there aren't four different ones. and it all goes into a single data set. But I'd actually ask our presidents if they want to speak about some of the things they do with their partner school districts.
President Zaragoza?
Federico Zaragoza, President College of the Nevada, for the record. So in our service area, we actually do direct marketing into the high schools with materials. But in addition to that, we also have weekly orientation sessions and informational sessions. So we're kind of trying to get the word out specifically to the students within the school that are eligible, and then supplement that with Q&As on an ongoing basis.
Regent Cavallo, one more question.
To piggyback on what Regent Carter said, this is more of a comment, I think that this would be a great conversation to have with those counselors that Dr. Brune mentioned about bringing them to the campuses. This is definitely an area where the institutions can partner with the high schools, because this is kind of that in-between area where both both sets of educational providers need to work together to get the students to understand that this is a great opportunity if they know about it and qualify for it.
Thank you.
Regent
Carter.
Could Dr. Hilgerson, President Hilgerson, also respond, since she was the highest of the people going through this, how they're marketing to their students there?
Karen Hilgerson, for the record. So I would echo what Dr. Zaragoza said about some of the initial opportunities for marketing, meaning we built it into our recruiting efforts, which includes numerous high school visits. The other thing, too, that I will say is Washoe County School District has been a great partner in this with us. They really embraced the program. I think the challenge is, after the students apply, it's really doing a lot of follow-up with them about all of the different steps. And we also train our mentors, and I'm a mentor of a handful of students, on the reminders that mentors need to give students along the way. So when I met with my mentees about, 6 weeks or so ago, I really hammered, please don't forget, you've got to do your FAFSA by April 1, So I think that we've done a lot of work on training the mentors so that when the mentors meet with mentees, they are the coach who reminds students to follow through with all the steps. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your report. And I would highly encourage every regent to make sure they're a mentor. I'm doing half a dozen myself, and I find it extremely fulfilling, and I see a real change in these students from the first meeting to the second to the third. I mean, it's really great to see them turn on to higher ed. With that, I'll go to item number 7. I just want to briefly explain that we have the, we're a member, and she's a member of the Association of Community College Trustees / Regents. We call ourselves Regents around the country. A lot of them are called trustees, but we have two main items that come up every year. Vice Chancellor McKinnon mentioned the legislative summit that was held in September. The other one is our annual leadership summit, and this year it's in San Francisco. It is the 50th anniversary of the ACCT, and at this event, there are 5 different awards given. And since I've been on the board, I don't believe we've ever submitted anything, and maybe we won't submit anything this year. We do have an opportunity, but I would really like to instill into our community college presidents and their teams that we should be competing for awards, because we do wonderful things in higher ed in Nevada, in my opinion, and I think we need to be recognized for that. So the different categories are trustee leadership, equity, chief executive officer, faculty member, and professional board staff. And the way this works, the deadline is June 10th, so you really do have an opportunity this year. It goes to a committee at ACCT, and we have 5 regions within ACCT, and we are in the Pacific region, and I sit as the liaison between NSHE and ACCT. So what they'll do is they'll pick that regional award, so it's, California and Nevada, Idaho, Washington, Oregon, Mariana Islands, Alaska, Hawaii, et cetera. And so the regional awards are awarded in the five categories in the five regions. They're notified ahead of time so they can come to the event, and then nobody knows who's going to get the national award until the night of the event. And those will both take place October 18th at the 50th anniversary ACCT Summit in San Francisco, October 16 to 19. So I'm just planting the seed. If we don't have anybody this year, let's shoot for some for sure down the road. So with that, we go back to, we got a question? Oh, I'm sorry, President Hilkerson.
President Hilkerson, for the record, actually it's an offer. So I've had the good fortune a few years ago, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, of being a reader for the ACCT and one of the decision makers on who wins the award. And so please let me know if you want me to help come in and help edit, help proofread, whatever you need if we do submit Regent Award nominations. I'd be happy to do that.
Okay, President, you hear that. And she's experienced, so, and she's a good writer, too. I know that. And thank you for volunteering to help. All right? Any other comments or questions? Okay, we'll go on then to item number 8. You're back on, Vice Chancellor.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. This is an item that was actually discussed through our Community College Council of Presidents meetings that we have every month with the four presidents and myself. And it became clear that we have some really fantastic avenues whereby, as a board, we recognize outstanding faculty members as well as outstanding students through a number of awards. And something, you know, I think that the presidents realized was we don't necessarily have the same opportunity always to recognize some of the outstanding staff that exists in general across community colleges, and perhaps the desire to look at a way to do that. And so we put this on here today as an information-only item to garner input from you as regents in terms of whether or not there'd be an interest in creating these type of awards that would perhaps come to the Community College Committee or the board at large, you know, recognizing that and a process that would be in place at each institution whereby there'd be, you know, steps that would be involved to recognize one person from each community college each year as an outstanding staff member. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that Sonia Seibert at Great Basin College actually reached out to me to inform me that the community colleges some time ago had a annual conference in Nevada, and it was the community college conference, and I see some heads nodding out in the audience of people who may have been involved in these conferences. They stopped existing at the time of the recession, and as part of that conference, there was an actual awards that were given out for community colleges. I don't know that we're necessarily right at the point where we'd be able to get back to that conference and the cost put into it. I think it's something that we would like to probably discuss from the level of the presidents and think about. But in the meantime, the notion of an award of recognizing outstanding community college staff that are out there, in addition to the other great Regents awards that exist, was something that we wanted to throw out for discussion and seek your feedback on.
Regent Lieberman?
I feel very strongly that we do at minimum the awards. I think it serves two purposes, to raise morale and to show the community college communities that we appreciate them internally, but also it sends a message to the entire state that we are recognizing our community colleges in the same way we have a history of doing at our universities, and I think it's more than appropriate, and I think it will help with retention and motivation, and I just think across the board, it's a wonderful thing. I also do remember, long before I was on the board, the community college conferences, And if we can't get to a multi-day conference, maybe we could do at least one day a year with an evening before or after, very similar to what we do with our cultural diversity conferences, but make it with a fuller community college agenda. So I think that both have great potential, but I think the awards need to start as soon as possible and be public, not only to the individual college communities, but to the system at large and to our state across the board.
Okay, this award would just be within the community colleges, so I think at our main Board of Regents meeting, if you wanted to see the universities involved, that would be a
separate
one.
This has been done at the universities.
Okay, well, it has been
and
done.
And I think it needs to be done more
okay.
at the community college.
Okay, but all right, we're just talking community colleges here. Regent Carter?
Along that same line, I just want to make sure we're in parity as well with our other institutions, the State College and DRI. So if we do this, maybe we also send it to the board to, if there's not parity already, because I don't know if there already is at the university level, but for DRI and the State College to also have a very similar type of thing.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, thank you. And with that, we've already done item number 9. We'll go down to number 10, the Community College Campus Initiatives given by the presidents. And we'll start in ELCO with Dr. Helens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have some really good news, and we're also approaching very, very busy time for the college with all of our commencement. Let me just start there. Our commencement events begin in May, and on May 3rd, we'll have the Rural Community College Day with both Western and GBC at the state capitol. On May 11th, we have our Pahrump commencement, and we now have enough graduates in some of our campus centers that we actually hold commencement exercises in addition to ELCO. So on May 11th, we'll be in Pahrump. On May 15th, we have the Ely graduation dinner in the evening. And then on May 18th, we have the GBC commencement in the morning, and in the evening we have the Winnemucca commencement, and it's the first year we'll actually have a commencement in that location. And then also GBC was awarded the first number one nursing program in the state of Nevada by registerednursing.org. We're very proud of that. And recently in the Nevada Skills USA competition for the state, GBC took gold in first place in welding sculpture and welding fabrication. We took gold and silver in diesel, and we took gold, silver, and bronze in industrial motor control. And now students will compete nationally in Louisville, Kentucky. So we're very proud of them. And we do have awards for staff that we're just collecting now. So we also do an awards ceremony here. So we do talk about outstanding faculty, staff, and of course everyone is, but it's always nice to do these special recognitions. And that's all I have today. Thank you.
Thank you, President Helens. We'll go back the north to WNC, President Solis.
Morning, Regent. Vince Solis for the record. Updates from WNC include that we just went through the search process for our Vice President of Instruction and Institutional Effectiveness. I'm pleased to report that Dr. Kyle Dalpe, who is currently with TMCC and also serves as the legislative liaison for the system, will be coming to WNC starting July 1st. Dr. Hilgerson, thank you for sharing Kyle with us. So we're excited to have him on campus and looking forward to the work that he'll be doing with us. Also in line with the search for the Vice President of Instruction, we currently have candidates on campus yesterday and today for our Chief Enrollment and Student Success Officer. This is a new position on campus that will focus on our enrollment efforts along with our student success initiatives. We are hoping to have a decision made on that hopefully very soon. We should complete that process later on this afternoon. I'm also pleased to report that as a result of the work done by our Vice Chancellor and the rest of the NC team at UNR, we have combined services with our campus police, and we now have the officers on campus. That has been a great addition to the campuses for WNC, and we've also seen a lot more activity from our local sheriff's office in that partnership, making sure that they're visible on campus and providing some of those safety elements for the campus. Today we have the chancellor visiting campus. He is meeting with our academic faculty, our administrative faculty, our adjunct faculty, various different groups, and then he has lunch with the foundation. So today's a WNC day for the chancellor, and he's going to be there. He's been there most of the morning. He'll leave probably about 3 o'clock after he's done meeting with the faculty. So it's a full day for the chancellor on campus. We are also in the process of remodeling our Nugget Hall in preparation for the Regents meeting that will be taking place in the fall semester at WNC. We're looking forward to that. And then also we have our WNC Foundation has become more involved in the community as it relates to having off-campus sites. So Regent Del Carlo, you at one of our meetings yesterday, which took place at the Northern Nevada Correctional Facility, that went exceptionally well. And we're going to be doing more of those things in the community, get to know the community more, but also so the community can know more about WNC. And then last but not least, graduation for us is May 20th. We're looking forward to that. And that will be at 10 o'clock in the morning on that Monday. So we're excited about that and closing out the semester. That's all we have at WNC.
Thank you, Dr. Solis. We'll go to Dr. Hilgerson.
Okay. So Karen Hilgerson, for the record, my report goes back to January, since it's been a while since we met, but I'll try to be as concise as I can. I'm happy to report that at the start of the spring term, we received official word from the NWCCU that our mid-cycle report was accepted and sufficient progress was verified on all four of the recommendations stemming from the seven-year visit, which occurred in spring of 2016. So we're on a slightly different cycle than the CSN is. In addition, our two new applied bachelor's degrees received NWCCU accreditation, which is fantastic. And I'm very grateful, and I would like to put on the record to Dr. Melissa Dedman, TMCC NWCCU accreditation liaison, and also the TMCC vice presidents, Estella Gutierrez and Dr. Marie Mergolo, and the incredible faculty staff who created and sustained the programs, leading to a successful accreditation outcome. The other thing I should mention is that in February, TMCC was honored. We received an honorable mention from the Climate Leadership Awards. They only give one first prize, and then a couple of other colleges receive an honorable mention. So it was a really great event, and this is our work on campus sustainability, and that includes both campus operations and linking good environmental practices to curriculum, which we're making steady progress on. So we were very happy. And I was honored to be on a panel with an esteemed panel with Janet Napolitano, I can hardly say her name, and it was really a lot of fun. But I'm thankful to Craig Mebust and Yvonne Allen for their outstanding work and leadership with regards to sustainability at TMCC. And those are the two folks who are largely responsible for the award that we received. So also in February, I got some good news to report in math, which is definitely a challenge and a focus and should be at community colleges and universities nationally. The math department enrollment is up 9% compared to this time last spring. So I believe we've actually met our gateway target, or we're very close to that. The updated prerequisite for Math 120 is a likely contributor, because now we allow students to go directly into Math 120 with an A or B in Math 95, effectively bypassing Math 96 through this pathway. So this was took about a year of planning, and it's been implemented this year, and now we're seeing a nice enrollment bump because we're trying to let students in in a faster, more accelerated option. The number of students taking Math 120 is up 68% compared to last spring, and we expect this will lead to increased degree completions for students in disciplines requiring Math 120. I'm very proud of our work on apprenticeship. On both the state and national levels, we've been expanding apprenticeships. And to give you an idea of this expansion, in spring of 2017, we had one apprentice in our newly created TMCC-sponsored apprenticeship program. So we are registered as a sponsor, which is very unusual. But by fall of 2018, that has grown to 488 apprentices. 422 are TMCC students serving 10 employers. We also have an additional 437 students in our union-sponsored apprenticeships in our partnership with the labor unions here, and we appreciate this valuable partnership. So grand total, there are 925 apprentices being served through TMCC, about half through the TMCC-sponsored pathways and the other half through the union-sponsored articulation and partnership agreements that we have. But these are really great numbers, and I'm very thankful to the Tech Ed Division, folks like Barb Walden, Cheryl Olson, and Kyle Dalphy, who really made this happen. So Performing Arts, coming next fall, the TMCC Performing Arts Program will be collaborating with two Washoe County high schools. At Damani Ranch High School, TMCC instructor Stacy Spain will teach a Jumpstart theater class and will co-direct a collaborative production with the cast of students from TMCC and Damani Ranch High School, which is a signature magnet performing arts program there. At Reno High School, TMCC instructor Dave Anderson will teach two Jumpstart theater classes and direct the fall production. These partnerships are helping us build really deep relationships with Washoe County School District, establishing a pipeline of high school students who will ideally transfer to the TMCC's theater program and in a few years, hopefully in a new theater. These partnerships are also helping it, making it possible for us to vacate our Keystone Theater, which will save a couple hundred thousand bucks a year. I'm ballparking that. And I'm really excited that this was the recommendation of a shared governance committee, and it's a win-win for all. And I'm very proud of the work that this group of faculty and led by Dean Anna Douglas did. NC3, thank you, Regents. If you were able to attend the National Signing Day in February, our Technical Sciences Division held the National CTE Signing Day at the William N. Pennington Applied Technology Center. The event, conducted in conjunction with the National Coalition of Certification Centers, or NC3, mirrors the NCAA's National Signing for Athletes. And instead, it says, okay, professional technical student, we want you to sign on, too, because you're a superstar. It was a really fun event. And again, thank you to the Regents who were able to attend. We appreciate it. And bravo to our technical sciences folks for a great event. So now I'm up to March and April. We held some great events for National Public Health Week. We also did the annual FREE, which was a faculty-led, really almost like a massive learning community, and they focused on food, but they didn't just focus on delicious foods to eat. They also focus on what foods are bad, what are the effects of food production on the world, and how does that affect our carbon footprint? And believe me, it really does. These events were very, very well attended, and kudos to the faculty. There were many faculty involved in this effort. Great job. Starfish update. I'm thankful to faculty who have implemented starfish in their classes. This semester, we have seen over 1,993 early alert flags. So that means that people were in there flagging their students and those alerts were sent. And that culminates into outreach, which includes referrals for tutoring and counseling, and also faculty using the kudos feature in Starfish 2 to reinforce good, positive student behavior. We have a lot more work, though. We really do. It is a challenge to take a pretty sophisticated technology and teach faculty all of the different features that they can use and move forward with that. But we will keep working it. I had the honor of attending Washington, D.C. in the last week of March. I was invited by Superintendent Tracy Davis of Washoe County School District to attend with her to a joint meeting of the AACC and the AASA, which is the superintendent equivalent. It was really fun. It really was. There were about, I don't know, maybe 30 participants, so a nice small group, and we were led by esteemed Dr. Walter Bumpus, who's the executive director of the AACC, and AASA leader Dr. Dominic. It was great hearing about the national practices, and I think it gave us some good ideas for how we can move forward. And we also had an opportunity to share some of the good things that we're doing together here in the Reno Sparks area. Opening night, now I'm back, I'm almost in April now, I'm almost done. Opening night of the TMCC Play Almost Maine was really outstanding, followed by a beautiful and compelling student art show and competition. It's an annual event, really fun. That same week, we had a signing ceremony for many of our new women and men soccer athletes, and their families were in attendance. It was really, really quite moving. The student athletes expressed how appreciative they are to have the opportunity to play on the inaugural TMCC soccer team. And I mean, at the end, there were at least the whole Sierra 108 was filled, and that it seats about 225 people. Yesterday, the last soccer tryouts were held, so I presume our rosters are complete. Most of the students are from Nevada. Some of them are from the Las Vegas area. Many of them are from the Reno Sparks area. As of a couple of weeks ago, we had, I think, one player from Colorado. And I think the rest of the spots will likely go to local kids as well. So most of the students are Nevadans or local. As we move toward commencement, May 24th, we have much to be thankful for and many wonderful students to honor, and I hope to see most of the Regents there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll go to Dr. Zaragoza.
Madam Chair, Regents, Vice Chancellors, colleagues, and guests, for the record, Federico Zaragoza, President of the College of Southern Nevada, I want to thank you for this opportunity to present CSN highlights since my last report. As a first order of business, I want to commend Stephanie Hill and Dr. Kala McIntosh for their work on my Coyote plan. I hope that you got a sense that technology is a very important dimension of our ability to move the needle in student success. And at CSN, we're diligently digging into the deeper side of the agenda, which is the execution and the implementation. We're doing this in collaboration with our sister institutions. So I wanted to commend them for the record, because not only are they facilitating the internal execution, they're also participating and facilitating and creating that statewide approach to student success. CSN has also reached an important administrative milestone because the Department of Education Office of Inspector General has recognized CSN as a best practice and a mentor organization for the prevention of financial aid fraud. And I think you all remember that we recently had a audit, and the corrective action steps that were taken were so impressive to the department, and our ability to detect fraud has been so robust that we were identified and are now going to be getting referrals from the Office of Education in terms of how to institute effective financial aid prevention systems. So again, congratulations to Juanita Crisanto and her team for all the work that's been done there. In terms of recognition, CSN was one of only 11 colleges nationally to be recognized by the Achieving the Dream as a Achieving the Dream College of Distinction. And so I'll tell you what that means very quickly. It means that CSN reported a 10% increase in completion of Gateway Math and a 13% increase in the completion of English. In addition, CSN reported a 10% point increase in persistence rates for, and this is low income, this would be our Pell eligible students. And CSN also demonstrated a 10% increase in Latino student persistence. All of these are lead indicators that are amongst the best in the country in terms of moving that needle, and that will translate to increased graduation rates during our next IPETS reporting cycle. So again, kudos to the CSN family for the work there. As many of you know, and as has been reported, on March 25th, it was CSN Day at the legislature, and it was indeed a great day for CSN. Almost 100 students in two bus loads kind of loaded here in Las Vegas and were in Carson City the next morning. They were very, very effective. I'm very proud of our student government president, Andrew Sierra, who testified before several committees, specifically in reference to the Nevada Promise, and then also our health and science building. The feedback that I got from the legislators that our students were very impressive, they were well prepared, and of course many other groups have been up to Carson City with t-shirts, and that our CSN student body had ties and coats, and they were just very, very effective in representing and being ambassadors for CSN. We're also making great strides in some other areas. Our three student unions are progressing on time and on schedule, and we will be ready for our grand opening for fall 2019. As reported by Dr. Broom, Our multi-campus migration continues. We are down to a short list of applicants for those two positions, one at our Las Vegas North Campus and Charleston. I will be passing along more information as we get the dates, but there will be public forums as well as the search committee interviews. We're also continuing to make great strides on our Lumina and Complete College America Guided Pathways projects. Since our last update, the instructional teams from CSN, UNLV, and NSC have met to draft implementation plans and also to affirm articulation between the various institutions. Again, the value here is that it's not just CSN, it really is the whole community, and we do have external partners. We also hosted the Southern Nevada Momentum Pathway Planning Academy just 2 weeks ago, and the Complete College America content experts and colleagues discussed best practices and the research behind the best practices in terms of moving forward our Closing the Gaps initiatives and student success efforts. I'm also pleased to report, and just to supplement the report that you heard earlier from our Vice Chancellor, we have more than 10,461 students who have already applied for Nevada Promise. 4,700 of those students are in the pipeline to become CSN students for fall 2019. And also, in terms of impact, I just want to suggest that the Nevada Promise is much more than financial aid. It truly is about creating a college-going culture, and it engages our whole ecosystem. And just for the record, in the first year, CSN Promise students provided 43,000 hours of community service in this community. In addition to that, we engaged 506 mentors, many of which mentored more than one student. So you see that it's not only the internal community, many of our stakeholders are also providing mentorship opportunities. And for some, they're role models for our students in terms of career opportunities. And again, we work with hundreds of community-based organizations. Just a little supplemental information, questions that were raised earlier. So the CSN fall to spring persistence rate was in the 90% level, which is higher than the traditional group here. In addition to that, the demographics for most of the Promise students reflect the demographics of the graduating classes. So because it's a first kind of step type of opportunity, you'll see that across the state, we are being very successful in reaching across all of our respective categories, and we are reflecting the demographics of those graduating classes. Finally, we're also working very diligently to codify our CSN strategic plan. As was mentioned by Dr. Margot, it's one of the elements in our accreditation journey. And so we're being very diligent in moving forward with that. We had 12 planning forums, and I want to again thank Madam Chair Carlo Del Carlo, because she attended one of our sessions, and these were structured to do two things. One, facilitate engagement in small group discussions, and also to document all the comments that were being made by stakeholders. And again, we're very pleased. Overall, we will exceed 400 participants in those forums. The next step for us is obviously to prepare our draft strategic plan. We will be having a rollout and final opportunity for comment from the internal and external communities. We plan to present our new strategic plan to the Board of Regents during the fall meeting cycle. If I could, I'll just conclude by also reminding the Regents and the Anshi family that the CSN graduation is going to be on Monday. Our commencement is on Monday, the 20th, at 5:15 at the Thomas Mack Center. Madam Chair, that concludes my report.
Thank you very much to all the presidents. Do we have any questions or comments from the Regents? Vice Chair McKinnon?
I just wanted to give some kudos. He's a little shy about this, but President Zaragoza took the bus with the students.
That was in my
notes. Carson City. I just feel like that should be on the record for his willingness to do
it. It sounded like a great idea, and it actually turned out to be great.
I got to see him at about 7:30 a.m. with his eyes half open the next morning. So.
I have to say I had that in my notes too to comment on. No, that's fine, because I thought that was so admirable of you. That's a long drive. Anybody knows that's driven from Reno to Las Vegas, but it can be a lot of fun. So great. Let's see. I just have a question for Dr. Hilgerson. She's not there. She left us. Okay, I'll ask her later.
She's here.
Oh, she's here. Dr. Hilgerson, yeah. You mentioned in your report that you're now registered as a sponsor for apprenticeship. So could you just elaborate on what that means?
So, you know, it's unfortunate Jim New just left the room. He could have given you a lot of detail, but I can give you some broad strokes easily. In their apprenticeships in this country, when you look at two-year college apprenticeships, take many forms. But one of the rarest forms is when a college registers as the direct apprenticeship sponsor or provider. Typically, the college articulates credits, but they don't. But they're not actually the sponsor. What we've done is we've eliminated, I guess, the middleman, and our apprenticeships that we directly sponsor, meaning there is no union sponsor. Or there isn't another educational entity sponsoring, the community college is the actual sponsor. So our sponsored apprenticeships are with the following partners: Renown Healthcare, Tesla, Panasonic, which is the largest, 380 apprentices are with Panasonic, Hamilton, Vika West, H&T, and I believe those are small manufacturers, Lincoln Electric, MGM. This surprised me. I didn't realize we had a apprentices with MGM, and I believe they own Circus in town, Visiting Angels, and Vistaprint, as an example. So in order to become a registered apprenticeship sponsor, there is a lot of bureaucracy, paperwork, and filing with the Department of Labor, and I believe the Departments of Education, but don't quote me on that. That's where Jim New could be more helpful. So, but it was quite a process to become a direct apprenticeship sponsor.
Thank you for that explanation. Anyone else have anything? Okay, with that, we'll go to item 11. It's unique community college highlights. And just for the new regents on the committee, we do this every meeting. One of the colleges will be highlighted, and their IAC chair gives a more detailed update and their unique characteristics. And this month, it's IAC Chair Rob Hooper of Western Nevada College, and he's also head of the Northern Nevada Development Authority. He has monthly meetings, and they're excellent. Thank you. Go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Rob Hooper, and I thank you for the opportunity to bring this report to you. In reading the marching orders here, which is to provide highlights on the unique characteristics about our college and our community, I want to kind of drill down on those things a little bit harder. I'm not going to talk about new construction or new things that the president already has talked about. I'm going to talk about those two things. As far as our community, when I read that word, we're a large number group of communities in the Sierra region. If you look at the differences between what's going on in Yerington versus Dayton versus Carson City, Minden, Fernley, Fallon, it's really a large landmass, and there's a lot of different needs in those areas. I can tell you one thing that's common amongst all of our different communities is everybody is very proud of Western Nevada College. WNC does a tremendous job. I'm also happy to report that having President Solis on board has been wonderful. He has set a new way of reaching out in the community that we haven't had with some of our past presidents. Not that they did a bad job, it's just that Dr. Solis is doing a better job. He has created and forged liaisons with all different types of levels, the hospital systems, the economic development, with the government leadership, et cetera. He is, and his staff that follow his lead are really helping to bring together the region. which we greatly appreciate. And it shows the how meaningful a community college can be, not just to the students, but to the community in general. Now, as far as the region is concerned, as things that the regents may not know as much about, the Sierra region, which is its own unique region, which mirrors the service area of WNC, is going through some very different times right now. In 2010, the region is looking at industrial space. We were running about a 26% industrial vacancy rate in the region. We've had sustainable growth since then. Right now, we're under 1% in vacant industrial space. It's been a real challenge. We've had a lot more interest from companies wanting to move in to the region than we have space to provide for them. I like to say we're bumping our head on the ceiling. And it's not just real estate space. It's infrastructure, our highway systems, our rail systems. We're very challenged in that area. Housing has become a huge issue within the region. This has impact on, of course, bringing in new professors, doctors, workers. It's very difficult to bring them in. But I tell you one thing that is a common denominator problem for all of our current employers, our future employers, is the need, the expanding need for skilled workers. That is, in talking with companies, and we do that every day at NNDA, the number one issue that always comes up is there enough skilled workforce for us to expand here, to stay here, to move into this area? We're very fortunate to be able to put forward the programs at WNC, and that gets a lot of people very excited and interested in doing their business here. But we do have a growing need for more students. There is a common ground between employers and Western Nevada College. We need more students. We need more product coming out of our community college. That's a big issue. There's a counter-cyclical effect of a really great economy. Interest in economic development goes down. Enrollments go down. But the demand for students and employees goes up. So it creates a very unbalanced situation. And I can see us going through that right now. One of the other problems our region has had is a lot of our growth in the last 10 years has been with the retiree population. So we're seeing less families growing up and a lot more folks retiring to the region, and they don't have kids, they don't have students. I think our pool has gone down in that area. So that's the biggest challenge we have. And again, I'm very happy that Dr. Solis understands all these things, the staff understands these things, and they are being addressed. So thank you for that, sir. Now, as I said earlier, I'm combining these comments with an update on our last meeting of the WNC IAC, so I'll move into that right now. At the meeting, we had a presentation by Cal Dalpy, who explained his position as the lead lobbyist for NC. Mr. Dalpy discussed his work in tracking the bills that directly affect higher education. He explained his review of funding requests and their impact, and his report was very valuable to all the members to see the inner workings of NC and its interaction with the legislature. We also had a really good update by Vice Chancellor McKinnon on the Promise Scholarship Program, which he also shared with us here today. And it was very valuable, again, to the members to hear how this was progressing. A side comment on the Promise Scholarship is that I'm very fortunate to also be a mentor with students. And that's been a great experience for me. To meet with these students. And I've met, three or four times now we've met with the same students. And you start to develop a relationship and you start understanding where they're coming from. And they've brought things, they've brought problems, they've brought issues. How do they navigate their way into talking to the right counselor? A couple of my students have gone in, met with the foundation and been able to receive other scholarships. So it's worked out really well. We do our checklist. I'm happy to report that all of my students have done everything on time, which is really good. And in listening to the Starfish report today, which I found quite interesting, there might be some interesting opportunity there for the mentors to get some type of a report out of Starfish so that as mentors we had more to work with when we sat down with our students, because all we're doing right now is going through a checklist, nothing wrong with that. It's just if we knew more about their issues, we could probably help out more. So just a suggestion there. Now back to my report. We had a discussion on how IAC members could function as ambassadors for ENSHE. This is an area where I believe and our members believe that IAC is not being utilized to the full advantage. If there was more input directly from ENSHE as to what the needs are for communications into the community, we could formulate tactical approaches to get that done. President Solis gave us a great update, and I might say the updates we get are very valued, very much valued by our members. President Solis talked about such things as the recently held Women's Leadership Summit, programs to help increase student success, rural fundraising, event, which, by the way, I was fortunate enough to go to out in Fallon. It was a wonderful dinner, very well attended. And I can tell you what Bus Sharman said when he was standing there. He says, WNC is back, you know. So there was a lot of pride that happened there in Fallon. It was really a great event. But there was a lot of things that President Solis reported on. I won't go through them all right now, but one of the values of the IAC meetings is getting that kind of information out to its members. Vice Chancellor McKinnon provided a very informative update on the last special committee meeting, an update on Nevada Promise staff changes at ENSHE, the MGM program. Again, all this information helps our members know what's going on, because they're really, just because they're in a different business category, a different community category, they're pretty well blind to what's going on at ENSHE. So these updates are very, very valuable. We also provided a report on recent industry listening sessions that were conducted at the NNDA offices. Now, this was in response to a request from the Chancellor's Workforce Advisory Group, and we worked with Mr. Woodbeck to put these together. And they were very, very well attended sessions. We had three different sessions. We had one for manufacturing, we had one for IT cybersecurity, and one for logistics. In each of those groups, we had over 10 members of that industry show up. And we had very honest and open discussions as to what their skill needs are and could be, and their opinions on how WNC's curriculum is meeting their needs or not. A full report was given to Director Woodbeck for inclusion in the discussion with the Chancellor's Workforce Advisory Group. I think it was highly valuable to get that input, and it would encourage repetition of that type of activity. I found it's very difficult to get industry to come out and tell you exactly what they need. So if we can do more of that, I think it's going to help out a lot. One of the most significant parts on our 327 meeting was a discussion on the role of IAC with respect to providing advice. In thinking over the agenda, as chairman, I was going, well, what is it that we need to talk about at this meeting? And I just kept coming back to my head where the Institutional Advisory Council, right? Then I'm thinking, well, how much advice do we really give? you know, what is our role here? And that started to bother me. So I thought, oh, yeah, I'll put that on the agenda and we'll discuss it. And for those of you who were at that meeting, I think you would agree that it was a very robust discussion that took place. We've had the IAC now, I think, what, four, going on 5 years now? And I can tell you from my experience in working with committees, volunteer committees, that you get everybody excited, everybody starts coming at the start, you get a large turnout. Then as you go along, the turnout decreases, enthusiasm decreases, you start having trouble getting a quorum in the group. And I've seen that happening, at least in our IAC. And so I wanted to bring this to the table to say, how can we become more relevant? How can we become more significant so that members will volunteer their time and be there, and we can provide better service to the institution and to NSHE? So it comes back to how much advice as an IAC are we actually given, are giving. Now, this advice, we have to look at it as a two-way street. We want to give advice, but we at the same time need to know what advice needs to be given. So there needs to be a higher level of communication between the institutions and the members. And this was discussed in a very robust fashion at our meeting, very positive fashion. Now, the members believe, and it's true, that it's very helpful to hear from all the different parts of the inner workings of the college. They like having the presentations that we have, and they believe that the administration and staff brings relevant updates. They'd like to see more of that. They'd like to be better educated as to what's going on with a request. Here's what we're doing. Here's what we need to know. How, as you as members of the IAC, how can you help us learn those things? What can we do there? So I think it comes down a lot to us asking the IAC members for their help. And I think we'll get it. It was amazing to me as we got into this discussion how members who had sat there and really not had much to say for several meetings all of a sudden got real excited. They wanted to put their opinions in on this. So the result of that whole discussion, which I won't go into all the details of, it was actually quite interesting, is that we're going to start working from WNC's point of view to bring more presentations and more requests to the IAC, including presentations by students to know what their needs are. I think it's going to be really good moving forward. And I was encouraged also by comments from the superintendents from our K-12 system. They saw this as a really good step forward in getting their input in things. So it fits what's going on in our region right now, coming back to that, in our community. There is a coming together of organizations within the community to address our growth issues. So I see the IAC becoming more relevant and more functional because of this. And I'm looking forward to our next meeting so I can report on that the next time I come in here. So that's what we did at the meeting. I wanted to also just give you a quick update in closing on what's going on with our ROADS program. This, as you recall, stands for Realizing Opportunities for the American Dream to Succeed. And this is something you've heard me talk about for some time. It's not been as easy to get going as I would have hoped, but just in short summary, this is aimed at, and by the way, Mr. Woodbeck gets a lot of the credit for getting this thing going. Because what we're looking for through the ROADS programs, we're trying to get to the 25 to 34-year-old folks who graduated from high school but didn't pursue any post-secondary. We believe that's our missing workforce in Nevada right now. They're already living here. We don't have to put them into housing that almost doesn't exist. They already are employed. They show that they can show up on time and do things. How can we upskill them? How can we get them into that? How can we provide them an economic support package that allows them to be upskilled? So the ROADS program is designed to answer those needs. I'm happy to report that Assemblyman Kramer was able to get a $200,000 line item set aside within the Dieter budget to kick this program off. And we're working through and along with Senator Cortez Masto to leverage those dollars in D.C. To increase the amount of funding that would be available for a replenishing fund to meet economic needs of these students, to increase enrollment into our Indian Western Nevada College for us, and to pilot a program that we think could be very beneficial when implemented in the other parts of the state, if not the broader Western states. So we're moving forward on that. I'm also happy to announce, and I'll back up one half a step, one of the problems that we had and have had, and thank you, Vice Chancellor McKinnon, for helping us solve some of these issues, is getting everybody to play in the same sandbox. And that's, I didn't realize that was going to be so hard when we pushed this idea out. But we found, as this has gone along, that a lot of different organizations are very protective of their of what they do, and it's hard to get them to work together. So we've taken that on as a major endeavor, and right now at the same table, we have organizations that formerly had not worked that closely together, such as Carson City Health and Human Services, that has a really good training program for teaching soft skills, Capital City Circles Initiative, which works on life skills, FISH, which kind of revolves in both areas but helps bring people into programs that are that need that kind of help. JOIN, that has a tremendous suite of capabilities. The Papa May Adams Foundation's hub in downtown Carson City. Our library systems, they have tremendous assets. So bringing all that together as a package, as a toolbox, and then having them work together in a referral system to attract our potential students into that system, and then have a funding mechanism to help them get into a program. We have all these folks now sitting on at the table and working through how we're going to do assessments, how we're going to get these folks into programs, and how we're going to track and work with their success. So I think we're making great progress on it right now, and I'm very happy with where that's going. So with that very short presentation, I will say thank you for your time and the opportunity to present to you.
Thank you for your always informative and thorough report, too, Rob. Do any regents have any questions or comments at this time? Vice Chancellor McKinnon?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank you, Chair Hooper, but also I want to make a comment on our IACs in general, which is when I started as Vice Chancellor of Community Colleges, I'd go to all the IAC meetings, and we didn't have regents going to them. Through your request of making sure we gave you the dates, I'm delighted to report that all of our IAC meetings have had at least one regent at them in the past 6 to 8 months, and I'd ask you to consider going and sitting in on those and listening to those. They're public meetings, and if you just let us know and let the board office know, we always make sure that we have a seat for you there, and just delighted to have regents attend the IAC meetings, and so thank you for your attendance at those.
Regent Lieberman.
And as Rob talked about how the IACs could be more helpful to the campuses and working along those guidelines, how can we as regents be more helpful to the IACs when we're there and when we're not?
And Madam Chair, I just want to ask that perhaps you put that topic
on
for
new
business.
That's what I was thinking.
And
too.
Not discuss it today, please.
Oh, I understand.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Dr. Z, did you have your hand up? Okay. Rob, thank you again. And I just want to say, when I first saw the Rhodes presentation, that program has great potential. So now that things are getting worked out and people are more collaborative on this process, I see great things with that. And so maybe down the road we can have an update on it. And you got a slow start, but my mantra is, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. So with that, we'll go to
you.
Item number 12 with new business. Do we have any new business?
I do. Yeah. I would like to hear more information about President Helen's award that she recently received.
Okay. That would be under new business?
Well, if you're going to agendize it.
Oh, okay.
And the other option is you could just call her and ask her. But if you want it as an agenda item, then that's what new business is supposed to be.
I would just like to congratulate her then on her award from the Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you, Regent Perkins. Anybody else? Regent Lieberman.
What I just said about Regent's support and interaction with the IACs.
Okay. We can put that on as an agenda item. And I agree. I was at the meeting when Rob Hooper gave the discussion on the role of the IAC and a little more meat to it, and it was a robust discussion. So that this would be a good topic for a future. Okay, Regent Carvalho?
If it's appropriate, I would like to add an update on the MGM program as it relates to community colleges at our next meeting.
Okay, thank you. That's certainly appropriate. Anything else? Seeing nothing else, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
Public comment.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Public comment. I know, we got a flight to catch. Is there any public comment in Elko?
No public comment from Elko.
Thank you very much. How about any public comment in Reno?
None in Reno, Madam Chair.
Thank you. How about public comment in Las Vegas? Okay, now.
So moved.
So moved. Second. All in favor? Meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. Happy Easter.